I myself am quite tolerable. Practical. Tolerable, practical magician.
Welcome to Lost Hope, a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast. I'm Bubba, and with me is Mr. Catfish.
Thank you very much. You know, I want you to know I felt very special this week because I received a FedExed package.
FedExed package?
From one of our double L's.
Double L?
Loyal listeners.
Oh.
Who? Holly Huntpants.
Oh.
Who sent us...
Yes.
...a king cake.
What a king cake?
King cake
is... Raven king cake?
It is a raven king cake. It's a special New Orleans delicacy. Usually you can only get them during Mardi Gras. What happens is a nice cake and it's decorated. It's kind of like, sort of like a, you know, it's just a cake. It's a cake that's a braided cake.
I'm going to leave that long in so all our listeners can understand all the editing I have to do. All the freaking
editing you always leave it in. And it gets decorated nicely.
I edit out all your
Thank you so much.
Last week we had this long period where you were convinced that the guy
You were convinced
that the frigging actor from Whose Line Is Anyway, you're like, oh, this guy's Uncoupling.
Oh,
let me spend 15 minutes looking on IMDb to prove this guy wasn't on Coupling.
And now you've brought it up again. So
listen, this cake,
it's a special Mardi Gras tradition. And inside, there's a little plastic baby you put somewhere inside the cake. And whoever finds that baby, who got that baby, puts together the next party. So anyway, we got that gift and it was addressed to Mr. Catfish.
Oh.
And so when the guy came to the door, he knocked on the door, opened the door, he said, Mr. Catfish?
Oh, wow.
I said, yes, that is me, Mr. Catfish.
Oh, well, we do not ask for anything, but this is incredible.
This is great.
Thank you
so much.
And it's Joe Gambino's. Those are very famous.
Yeah, Gambino.
All right. So, Catfish.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, our listener, Holly, is putting all other listeners in the dust. It's a bit...
She is.
It's a bit... We don't ask for much. We demand We demand prizes from
BBC America. We demand prizes for our listeners, but we don't
ask
for anything from our listeners.
No. This is wonderful. Thank you so much. Catfish, we have just watched Chapter 7, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah.
And are you glad now at the end... They revealed who the real villain was.
All along, I knew it was Steven.
No. It was. They revealed the real villain, Catfish.
Okay, and who was the real villain?
Lady Pole.
Lady Pole was. I did not realize that.
As we all know, making fun of somebody for how they look and how they dress, not cool. Lady Pole was a bully this whole time.
This whole time.
Terrible.
I thought it was Steven, and it turned out to be he was complete. I will say this, though.
No. Wait a minute. How about Lady Pole? What's a golden rule when you go to a dance? Leave with the one that brought you. But she totally left Thistle down in the dust.
She did, although he lost interest in her as soon as he got Arabella.
Never.
I mean, there was that one point when he suggested a three-way, but other than that, he seemed to have lost interest in Lady Pole. Oh. I will say one thing to Arabella, though.
Let's hear it.
Because in the end, Jonathan Strange encouraged her to move on, to not hold on to anything. And I just want to say this to Arabella.
What?
If you're interested in someone who is the complete opposite of magic, who's not magical in any way, I want to put my friend forward. Bubba.
Mork?
I was going to suggest myself, but then I thought Mrs. Catfish might be in trouble. Sorry, excuse me, Ms. Catfish.
Okay. Give her some freedom.
Yeah.
You're just a reflection. Okay.
She can attest to the fact that I'm not magical in any way.
Okay, sure enough. That's four minutes worth of editing right there at the top of the show.
Oh, man.
Everybody, welcome to the Lost Hope podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Catfish, we begin with our ratings out of 10. We just saw Chapter 7, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. The final episode in this 7-part miniseries. Mm-hmm. Let's hear your rating out of 10. Let's hear it.
Mm-hmm. I am going to give it 8.5 reunited half fingers.
Out of 10?
Out of 10 reunited half fingers.
So 8.5, that's not your high, which was last week's episode.
Yeah, I think it's just hard to tie everything together in a way that is totally satisfactory. Again, I think I lowered the episode where we lost Arabella just because I was emotionally upset. And so I think, you know, this is not entirely analytical. It's a little emotional. I would have liked to have seen everybody back together again.
Okay.
Happily. But I had settled on not looking forward to a happy ending for everybody considering the tone of this.
Right.
But I thought that it was a very, I thought it was very well done. And again, I'm happy to see that finally the real villain, Steven, has been unveiled.
Oh, how terrible.
He got what he deserved, and then he got more than he deserved.
The poor guy was treated like less than everyone else for his whole life. Treated like a slave, not only from the Poles, but also from the gentleman with thistle down here. And to call him a villain catfish.
I think the Poles, I don't think the Poles treated him like a slave. Okay, not the younger Poles.
Well, yeah.
Okay, the older Poles, yes.
But even then, they treated him like a second-class citizen. I would argue.
Okay.
But they probably treated all their servants like a second-class citizen.
Right, right. So, I don't think that had anything to do with his race. But okay. Fine.
All right.
So he's treated like a second-class citizen, so he deserved to be, I guess you're saying he deserved to be an asshole in Lost Hope?
No,
I mean, the end, he became the king of Lost Hope.
He saved everybody. He saved everybody in Lost Hope. He was the one who, when he was granted by accident all of England's magic,
right?
He said, you know, I could do anything with this. The first thing I'm going to do is take out this SOB.
Well, and then he just took, it seemed like he was just taking down Lost Hope. I don't know if there's anybody left.
Let's remodel.
By the way, he didn't.
Yeah, he was going to flip Lost Hope. Okay, he's like, let's go remodel this.
Quick question. Who did he let go in Lost Hope? He didn't let go Belle. She Strange got her out of there. Strange and Norrell got themselves out of there.
Yeah,
the rest of those things, I don't think, they didn't feel like they were real people to me.
Well, they were fairies and other human prisoners, and so
I didn't get the sense there were other human prisoners there.
Well, listen, we've got to end this. Yes, we got to end this in 7 episodes. We can't go into these extras' lives.
Fine,
catfish.
Fine. I'm just trying to. You're defending Steven as a hero, and I'm not quite seeing that.
Sure. Why not anti-hero like okay, Walter White?
Fine.
All right. So for my rating, catfish. I'm going to give this 8, what I like to call triple D's out of 10.
Triple D's?
Yeah, triple D is what I use when I want to refer to dearly departed draw light.
Dearly departed.
My Lord.
Oh, man. He, you know, I think it's probably better that he passed in the end. He wouldn't have wanted people to see him like that. He was a mess.
He was a mess. He didn't even have his spoon. He was so down and out.
That is true.
What I would say is that he's currently spinning his spoon in heaven, up in the skies, beyond the rains and clouds.
Right.
This, I'd say, why did I give this an 8 out of 10 when last week I gave a 10 out of 10? I would say this might be the first time in the whole miniseries where knowing the book might have tampered my enjoyment of the show.
Okay.
In that certain things went down differently in the book. Very similar kind of outcome, but things did go out down differently in the book. And one thing that is going to be hard to say, and I'll point this out as we recap and review the episode, is that at those beginning episodes, I was such a fan of the whimsy and humor. And in this episode, even though I thought it was actually successful humor, I giggled and laughed at many parts of it. I almost thought it was out of place because I wanted it to stay as intense as last week's episode did. And there were parts of this episode that were wonderfully intense. And then there were parts that, even though they were funny, like a great hilarious bit was Norrell's trying to blend in with the dancers at Lost Hope.
Right, right.
It felt jarring to go between the extreme of that tension of Thistledown torturing everybody, one person's sense of speech, one person's sense of hearing, one person's sense of sight, and then to go to that humor.
Having seen it now, it would be interesting to talk to Peter Harness, a screenwriter, who promises a signed script, to talk to him to find out kind of why he decided to put that in there. Did he feel like it was too dark and wanted to lighten it up? Because I agree with you. It was funny, but it did take a little of the tension out.
The edge out, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that, I went to an 8 out of 10. That's still really good.
Still very good.
And two moments I loved in this episode is I loved when Lady Pole did tell off the gentleman. I loved her strength and I loved her in that scene. And then there were two kind of final Jonathan and Arabella scenes. And the one that really worked for me was the one in Lost Hope, where he kissed her and she remembered him and he was just going to get her out of there. So I really, really loved those scenes.
You know, what's nice was, it's interesting to talk about Lady Pole, was, and we talked about this before, about how long has really passed in this, years and years and years, but it's still hard to sort of process as you're watching it until you think about it when you know, I can't remember who it was, says to Mr. Pole, you know, it was a man with thistledown hair, said,
right.
You didn't mind her being...
Right, you were blind to it,
for years. For years and years, you didn't mind the struggle, and you think about it, and you go, yeah, she had to put up with this for years.
Yeah.
So she's ready to go out on her ownsies.
Right. It's not you, it's me. We will probably, let me say, folks, a week from today, we're recording this on Sunday, a week from today, I'll be landing in Ireland.
Oh.
Ah, Beggin' Begorra. You try to give me any trouble, Thistledown, and I'm going to take the shillelagh and shove it up your up your meat pie hole. So, but I maybe when I come back, we'll do a Blu-ray DVD review. A lot of people are hitting us up with requests for things to continue on and stuff. We'll talk about that after the recap and review.
Okay.
But for now, I definitely want to say thanks to all our wonderful special guests we've had on the podcast. We've had screenwriter Peter Harness, Tor.com's Kate Nevue. We had the wonderful John Repien from DailyGrail.com. We had Little Murray, our Double C commercial commentator. And, of course, Double M, Matt Murdick, who did the great music score last week, or 2 weeks ago, maybe. Or was it last week? I get so confused.
No, it was two weeks ago.
Yeah, it was so 2 weeks ago. And listeners, I know we have pushed these prizes oh so much.
Oh, man.
So
we do have some, though. We did get some.
We do have some from the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Catfish, we're going to give them away at the end, but do you want to describe them and read the letter we got from BBC America?
I will. Someone from BBC America sent us this card.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And it says, hi, Catfish and Bubba.
Thanks.
So just like Strange and Norrell, they put my name first for a strange reason.
Big mistake.
It says, thanks so much for being fans of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell and for creating your podcast. You're the best.
Thank you. Yes.
And we really appreciate all the effort you put into being such excellent fans of the show.
Hey.
We hope you like these bookmarks and continue to keep being awesome! Exclamation point. We always try to be awesome.
Definitely.
And it says, best BBC America.
That's who sent it to us.
BBC America.
Very nice.
So let me describe these bookmarks because when you say bookmarks, you're like, oh, crappy little paper things. They're actually much nicer than that. They are the kind of bookmarks where you see one image and then when you turn it, you see a different image. So it's very cool.
Yeah.
It's the images from the Blu-ray DVD cover for the British cover.
Well, not really, because remember, Norrell sitting down and then his...
Oh, right. Okay, they're dressed the same, and it's the same style and look. So one way, obviously, you see Mr. Norrell.
Team
and then
Norrell.
You turn it another way, and you see Jonathan Strange.
Team Strange.
I'm Team Strange.
All right.
So that's what we'll be giving away at the end of the podcast, along with the bell.
The footnote bell. We're also going to have a drawing for a signed copy of a script. From Peter Harness of one of these episodes of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. He, as Catfish mentioned earlier, he has said that he would send it this most recent week, but obviously sending it here to Los Angeles might take a while.
Right.
So listeners, if we draw you as the winner of the script, don't bother poor Peter Harness, who's been bothered so much. We will get it to you once we receive it. And if for some reason...
So you have faith.
If for some reason...
Uh-huh.
Team LaSalle's intercepts our mail.
Right.
It'll be replaced with another footnote bell. Okay, so we're gonna give it away. People are excited, and
or maybe a copy of the show.
All right, that could be a great option.
One of the two items. We'll figure
it out,
and we'll take care of it if Peter Harness does not. But we believe in Peter Harness.
I have faith. All right, so. Catfish, are you ready to jump into Chapter 7?
Ooh, I'm ready. It's the end. This is the end.
I know. I saw a lot of tweets of people saying, oh, I can't wait for Season 2, or I can't wait for it to come back, or I hope it comes back. And those people may not have realized this is based on a wonderful novel by Susanna Clarke. So we begin, and I actually love this beginning scene where Sir Walter Pole, he's doing... you know, there's the thing called the perp walk. There's the walk of shame.
Uh-huh.
This is called the common walk because he is walking into the House of Commons to pretty much be taken to task and to pretty much answer for all his F-ups.
Well, what's nice is that rather than let other people yell at him, blah, 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 you, hada, you, huh?
Right.
He just says, listen, all this stuff went down. It was super bad. It's kind of my fault. So I'm out of yo.
Right. Right. This is President Nixon here in the States did one of these. Now, Catfish, as we're watching him say all, he's pretty much doing his own version of Previously On.
Right.
Do you blame Sir Walter Pohl for this? Is he really to blame?
No, I can't blame him for that. If it hadn't been somebody else who was interested in the if it hadn't been him interested in the magic, somebody else would have been interested in the magic.
Right, but he did get interested in it because of it, how it could help him specifically. Not the country, not the kingdom, but him, because he's like, it brought my wife back. And he was ignoring magic, and he was like, it's disreputable. I don't want to deal with it. And then when it was his wife that was brought
still,
back.
My impression was more like, I don't see any functional use for this because the only thing you can really do is clean clothes with it. So in other words, I don't think it was that he was... I think when he saw how powerful magic was, then he promoted. I don't think that he did it for a... You know, he didn't say, save my wife and I'll move you forward. It was, oh my God, if the magic can do this, it can do other stuff.
All right, okay. We'll get back to Sir Walter Pohl in a bit, because I kind of feel like you do. I feel like he got a bit of a raw deal of everything in the end.
But I can see why he falls on his sword. You know, he promotes it.
He mentions that Jonathan Strange is planning to come back to England and bring his Black Tower with him. And sure enough, in Venice, we see the Black Tower disappear into the sky. And then we see the people we met last week, the good Gray Steels, and... She goes up to the mirror, which you were
right.
Correct.
I knew it too,
you
though.
Had guessed. It was a mirror that Jonathan had left for her, and she pulls it off. And do you think she knows what this mirror is for?
I'm just going to assume she doesn't, since I don't know what the mirror is for.
And as this whole talking goes through from Sir Walter Pohl, we see visions of everything, and we see his wife can't be woken up by Segundus, because she is there at the never-ending ball in Lost Hope.
Everyone was so worried. I was worried she was kaput here.
Yeah, everybody, that means you really didn't remember the book, Catfish.
I didn't. We've already covered that. There are things that happened like four episodes ago I didn't remember.
And possibly a bit.
Remember early in the season I said, oh, man, Lady Pole's not long for
yes,
this world.
Yes, I remember when you said that, and I was like biting my tongue, I bit my lip, I biting my hand.
Well,
like
it was good. It kept people on their toes.
Okay. We also see as people in the House of Commons, there's like, where's Mr. Norrell then? And Sir Walter Pohl has to be, he left.
He bailed. Now, I would think, that considering now they need defense against all this, they would have dragged Norrell's ass back.
Right.
And say, listen, you do whatever you need to do. At least challenge him. Maybe he can block you out by creating the great labyrinth around his library, but at least a bid to grab his ass and bring him back.
Do you think if he heard on his front door, he would be like, LaSalle's, you get it.
No one here. There's no one here by that name.
All right, so do you think this is a bit of foreshadowing? And this is a question for all of our listeners. Feel free to tweet at us and tell us what you think. And that is as we see the carriage of Childermas and Norrell riding back to Hertfew Abbey up in Yorkshire, we see that Childermas is looking at his infamous cards, and what does he see? But he sees the symbol of death, La Morte. So is that foreshadowing? Listeners and Catfish, are Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell dead at the end of this?
Oh, okay. I was going to say it's going to be really hard to ask a question of someone when this series is over. Are they dead? No, I think they've been whisked away somewhere.
Okay.
And it makes an interesting point at the end. Where have they gone? I think they go where all magicians go. Magicians don't die.
Vegas?
I think you're right. You are right. They're in Vegas. They'll be appearing nightly at the Trop.
In 1816, going to Vegas would really be... What happens in Vegas would stay in Vegas.
They're like, what are we doing out here in the desert?
There's nothing to reflect anything on this.
Thinking away from Bugsy Malone to show up.
All right, so as we continue on, Walter Pohl steps down. As you said, he falls on his sword. Not the sword that Stephen's going to stab him with later in the episode. But a different sword. And Stephen, I think this is a great little scene. Stephen, Once again, he's back at the Pole's residence in London, but he's not doing too well. He sees a reflection in a knife that he's cleaning, and then he pans the knife up, and he sees what in the background? Sure enough, Lost Hope.
Mm. Yeah, well, he sees, the crown looks delicious on him.
And so we find out that Sir Walter Pole's like, Stephen, ready my carriage. I want to go visit my wife.
Well, right now, Walter Pole, what has he got to do? Nothing. And basically, all he's got, we learned earlier, how does Walter Pole survive? Off of his wife's dowry. So might as well go check her out since she's his cash cow.
Ouch. All right. So we leave from that and we get to probably the saddest scene in the episode. Draw light dressed like a bum. I think these are his Venice clothes. They've just been through hell when they get dragged across the streets.
He is quite a mess.
And Team LaSalle's comes up and he's meeting with Drawlight, and Drawlight is letting him in on the bad news. He's pretty much telling him Strange is in Venice. He's trapped in a black tower. I have to deliver these three messages. And LaSalle's, he cuts to the chase. He's like, you were there in Venice. Why didn't you just kill Strange?
Right. Drawlight makes a good mess. I tell you what, great idea. Why don't you go do it, pal?
Yeah, good luck to you,
buddy. Why don't
you
try to kill a magician?
So he says, I'm supposed to send, give a message to Lady Pole. LaSalle's like, no, give it to me. And Drawlight's like, whoops.
Well, that one's
already
been sent.
Mailed it. But I've got this other one, this box and this note that I'm supposed to give to Childermas. And he's not supposed to do anything until Jonathan Strange gives him the information.
And I got to say it, I'm surprised he's sufficiently frightened by Jonathan Strange that he's not ready to give up the ghost. This is not the old Drawlight. The old Drawlight would have been like, oh, yes, my dear friend, for a few sow, you can have it.
Right, exactly. For a new spoon, you can easily have this finger and this note. And LaSalle's, in the last episode, LaSalle's was like, fairies? How ridiculous. And now when Drawlight's like, listen, Mr. Norrell sold Lady Pole to a fairy and stuff, and here's this finger and here's this note, LaSalle's isn't laughing anymore. In fact, he's just PO'd.
And he's like, get out of here, though. This is horrible. I don't believe you.
Right.
He steals the pinky. He's crowding his foot.
Yeah, sure.
Crowding his foot on Drawlight's hand.
And sure enough.
Uh-huh. Yes?
This is my first nominee for Magician of the Week.
And?
Team LaSalle's. Now, Catfish, do you remember?
Yes.
Do you remember? It was just episode 4 where LaSalle said, LaSalle's told Drawlight, he's like, if you do anything to threaten my relationship with Mr. Norrell, I'll kill you.
Okay.
And that was a prophecy that came true.
Oh, okay.
A self-fulfilling prophecy, the most incredible magic, Team Henry LaSalle's.
I'm just surprised he didn't say, I'll shoot you dead in the eye, because that
would have been better, right?
I'm telling you, LaSalle decided, we didn't realize until today, LaSalle decided every question is answered with a gunshot.
Heck yeah. So we see that Sir Walter...
So now, I was going to say, I'm a little concerned at this point.
What do you mean?
Because again, I think I've mentioned this before, I hate when things turn on a small thing, so I was really worried that the lack of the letter being delivered, everything would hinge on that. Now, again, while it was unfortunate and it caused trouble, not everything hinged on that. If that had been delivered, things would have been better, but it wouldn't have saved the day.
Exactly right. So Sir Walter and Stephen have reached Lady Pole in... They find out that Lady Pole has been asleep for days.
Mm-hmm.
The Secundus and Honeyfoot, they say, hey, listen, the doctor have looked at her. They can't find anything wrong. But the one thing we think is your ladyship is not mad. She's under an enchantment.
Right. And then Walter Pole's like, all right, but what is WTF is this?
Yeah.
You're letting other dudes write her letters?
Yeah.
In a props.
Right. If this was today and you saw your wife was while she was in a coma, was getting text from some other guy, Not cool, Jonathan Strange.
Yeah, exactly. I think Jonathan Strange has got enough ladies on the hook here.
He's got Flora. He's got Arabella.
Mm-hmm.
He's pulling them all together. And sure enough, we leave that and we go into Lost Hope. And here's where, Catfish, have you ever been to the far side of hell where they have this three dances? What? How is it described again?
No, it's the dance of three partners.
Oh.
Yeah.
Naughty.
I believe Mork was involved with the dance of three partners once. What's interesting about this is before we hear about the dance of three partners, what's really clever here is what we learn from this is, again, it's something that you can infer later on, is that this is the information that she got from the letter. Hey, right. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help
exactly
you out.
Right.
And so again, that's something that's not spelled out, but you figure it out later on. And then of course you forget all that because you think of the man of the thistle down here getting busy with these two fine ladies.
Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I tuned in to this episode not expecting BBC America After Dark.
Well, that is what you got.
This is...
This BBC America Co-Ed Confidential 3.
Right. He's like, eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
And what a shock. He's going to pick the newbie because I'm telling you, Lady Pole's been getting the shaft, and I don't mean the man with the thistle down chair. He's been shutting her out ever since he got Arabella. He likes the shiny new thing.
Right. And Lady Pole steps in to help keep Arabella away from this creep.
Yeah.
So that's
now, what do you think she thinks is going to happen? How much more can he enchant her? Because let's face it, he's not really, he's a fairy. He's not interested in like sins of the flesh. It's more the corruption of the spirit. So I don't know why she's trying to lead him away. I don't think what
keep
more
him
can
distracted.
He do?
You know, maybe Arabella, because she's enchanted, she can't distract them.
Right, but again, what I'm saying is I don't know any more that he could corrupt her than he already has.
Okay, so we get back to her. We go to Hertfew Abbey here up in York, and LaSalle's is already there, and in walk Norrell and Childermass, and LaSalle gives them the bad news. He's like, LaSalle's is like, guess what? Jonathan Strange is coming for revenge.
Bam.
Uh-oh.
And he says, I saw Drawlight, and we've got something for you, but no letter, nothing like that.
Oh, LaSalle's would not do well playing poker.
Now, this is the curious thing, though.
What?
If I was LaSalle, I would say, look, I'm protecting you. I would show him the letter. I would show him the other stuff and say, or you think he read the letter and thought this is bad? In other words, like,
I don't know. That's a good question.
You don't need to hold everything back. You can say, I'm the one with this knowledge, and I'm not going to share it, and so therefore, I'm your confidant.
Right. Well, do you think LaSalle's believes now that Norrell did call a fairy? And so it's like, hey, you know, keep that kind of bit of bad news away, that, hey, the word is out.
Right. That's what I would hold it over his head, though. Hey, okay, I figured this out. I'm not going to tell anybody, but...
Right.
You know.
So LaSalle's, he, like I said, he wouldn't do well in poker because Childermass is like, where's Drawlight? Where's Drawlight? And he's like, he went to this street in London. And then
right.
He's like, we can have him here in a day. Oh, no.
No, sorry. I misspoke. He went to his friends in Chapham.
Yeah,
what about Chapham? I don't know.
No, his aunt.
I don't
no,
know
not
whether
aunt,
it's, I don't know whether it's East Chapham or Northwest Chapham.
And so I love that Childermass, we have so many listeners to the podcast who love Childermass.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Childermass comes up to LaSalle's and he's like, utterly useless. Oh, no, bloody useless.
Yeah.
And we see that Mr. Norrell's like, I've got to strengthen the labyrinth to my library.
Now, here's a little, we'll do a little footnote. Again, Bub and I saw this uncut. The first two episodes.
The first two episodes uncut.
And with a little interview after with Eddie Marsden. And the first time we go into Mr. Norrell's library,
right,
there's a part that was cut out in the American version of Childermass leading
Honeyfoot and Segundus,
through a labyrinth.
Right.
And so you got a sense of that before. For those of you who didn't see that part, this is the first time you get a sense of like, wow, there's something outside the library that's confusing.
And I love this labyrinth. I think
it's great.
It's a great effect. We always talk about, or in my interview with Peter Harness, he talked about how this show wasn't that much more expensive than a typical show. And what's great is this is, you know, this is just practical effects. Let's make this little labyrinth and have the camera, you know, Steadicam follow them through. And it
works.
Well,
the other thing you can do is with cuts. So you can you can basically have just one hallway and a turn.
And then
you just you do it with cuts where you keep going around and around the same hallway.
And so this part of the episode, like I was saying, there isn't any humor in, and it's just getting more and more serious. Mr. Norrell's like, okay, we've done the labyrinth. Now I'm going to do some things on my door. And that is happening at the same time that LaSalle's is like, you should kill him. Hey, do you know any magic that could kill Jonathan Smith?
Now, he is super onto this, like, there's got to be a way you can do it. There's got to be stuff written about it. And even if there isn't anything written about it, I'm sure you could just, you know, frog him or something like that. Or
He even says if you kill Jonathan Strange, it's not like you would be punished or anything bad would happen.
Yeah, no.
Just do it.
Meanwhile, while he's doing that, Childermass has his own truth-telling device that he has.
Right.
He's hooked LaSalle up to, and that's called his cards.
And the cards have really got LaSalle's number because he's like, hey, you're a thief, you're a liar, you've got something of great importance, great value
that you're supposed to give to me. I mean, really, that is a lot of information you can learn from just five cards.
And LaSalle's, he is really going nuts. He shot and killed Drawlight. Now he's pulling a knife on Childermass.
Well, he has not been insane.
He
has not been happy. He's not been happy with the way that Childermass has been reacting. His sense of the social stratification has led him to be outraged by the presumptuousness of Childermass.
Yes. Now, there's the great point here
where
LaSalle says, you're a whore's son. And then Childermass says, better a whore's son than a thief. Let's hear it, Catfish. Which is better? Would you rather be a thief or a son of a whore?
I can't be both.
No, you could. I mean, I'm looking at you right now. You definitely could be both.
I'd rather be both.
Okay. I think you'd rather be the son. You know, being a thief, that's not cool.
No, but I want to be both. I think, you know what? I don't want to be restricted. I want on my business card to say, whore son, comma, thief.
Well, what if I'm a gentleman thief? You know, like Cary Grant in a lot of movies, To Catch a Thief. I'm a classy thief.
Okay, well then you come down on the side of thief.
Right.
I want it all.
All right. So
this
is a great section.
Childermass
right
let himself be cut.
Right.
But in the meantime,
so he could pickpocket. Remember, he was a pickpocket in his past, and he's got the finger, and he shows it to Mr. Norrell, and he's like, "I'm supposed to give this, you know, reunite this." Take it to Lady Pole, and look at Norrell's face. He is thinking this through, and he's like, Childermass asks for permission to go there, and Norrell's, after thinking it through, he says, no, you don't have permission.
Right, and Childermass's quick reaction is, okay, great, so I'm taking this back to Lady Pole.
Yes, but this is...
I'll see you later.
Oh, you've made the wrong choice, sir, as usual. Oh, what a diss. Oh, that's so good.
It is a total diss. And then LaSalle tries to give him a shot out outside the door. And it's interesting. This is kind of an interesting, like, really powerful speech that Childermass gives. He's like, be careful. You're in the north now.
Yeah, listen.
Okay, this is...
Norrell's house was built by the Raven King. The towns and abbeys were founded by him. You know, this is, you know... This is it. You better not diss the Raven King up north.
He's embedded in our very culture, so...
Right.
Don't smart mouth the Raven King.
And so Childermass, does that prove he's always kind of been a follower of the Raven King? Even though a couple episodes ago he's like, you know, maybe I'll follow you, maybe I'll follow Strange, I'll follow Norrell. But it turns out he was always a Raven King's man.
Well, I think what he's saying there is, and if we follow his kind of...
Yeah.
His whole overarching journey is that... He believes that the Raven King's magic should be out there along with other magic.
Yeah.
That the Raven King still needs to be represented.
Okay. And so LaSalle's is not going to let him be, you know, be dissed on his way out. So LaSalle's follows him into the labyrinth. Big mistake there, buddy.
Yeah. Did you not hear about the about the labyrinth and how it's been set up and how I think that Mr. Jonathan Strange can't even get through it? LaSalle,
right.
You magicless bum.
But what was great is there was a great scene of the sky getting darker as they were leaving the library. And sure enough, we see as Childermas is riding his horse away, that the Dark Tower has overtaken Hurtview Abbey.
And so we know who's with the Dark Tower.
Stephen King. I mean, no, Jonathan Strange.
Oh, good point.
All right. And so, uh-oh, there is trouble
coming.
It's
interesting. We hear the creaking, yep, which is the creaking that we usually hear with the man with the thistle-down hair.
That's right.
So that's kind of interesting.
Lascelles is locked away in kind of like a study. Nora looks at his candle. It goes out. Oh, snap.
Whoops-a-daisy. And he is a chicken shit.
Hey, now, wouldn't you be? And so he goes back into the library, and you know something's up, because when he left, a lot of these candelabras and everything were still covered in sheets. And he comes in, and they're all lit up and ready to go.
And, of course, then we hear Jonathan Strange mumbling, talking about giving us numbers. So-and-so people from here, three people from there, da-da-da. So Strange is in there, but he seems a little preoccupied in kind of a mad way.
Right, but he's already talking to Norrell. He's not only talking to himself, he's mm-hmm. talking to Norrell. And what were all these numbers? It was a problem that not even the Raven King could solve. He could not prevent Christian men and women being taken away and stolen into Faerie. And if you read the footnotes in the book, theoretically, maybe that's why the Raven King left way back when.
To try and go get those people?
Well, to close the doors so that the fairies couldn't get in.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Maybe. We'll see. And so Jonathan Strange, he is there. And Mr. Norrell is trying to be a gentleman. He's like, you got past my labyrinth. How'd you do that? That's
right. They do
really
a little. They do a little shop talk. Right. Did you use this one? No, I used that one. You know, I mean, he's kind of a minor guy, but specialty in labyrinths.
Right.
So you might want to think about that next time you want to build one.
Oh my goodness gracious! And Jonathan Strange still looks insane, but we see the power of the Black Tower sucking away their life force, their energy. And Mr. Norrell still believes at this point that Jonathan Strange has come to get his revenge and to hurt him.
Absolutely. Wouldn't you?
I would, but then why does Mr. Norrell right here, he's like, this is your fault, Strange, opening the roads, breaking all the mirrors, dealing with fairies. How could you do that?
Disreputable magic, sir.
This is your fault. And so you can see Norrell, even when he's scared, Norrell-less, he's not willing to take the blame.
He tries to run away, and Strange does some flashy magic where there's like bursts of fire that have Jonathan Strange in him. And at one time, he says, when the flame comes up and you see his face, he says, boo.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a little, right, it's like an impressive fireball, but the boo was kind of like, boo. Get it? Look, I can do what I want. And finally, Strange kind of slams Norrell up into one of these columns, and he's like, listen, buddy, enough is enough. Norrell is like, oh, yeah, stop it, or I'll take it out. Don't make me angry. Don't make me do this magic when I'm angry.
Right, and he's like, okay, sure, go ahead and do it. And then he gets that look on his face. You know when Norrell is either trying to take a crap or do magic.
Right.
So he does it's the crap magic face.
Yes, for sure.
And all he gets is, now what do you think Norrell's trying to do here? Surely he's not trying to get it to rain on him.
No, I think he was trying to bring a storm down on him, you know, storm. And he got magic. And did you start to feel sorry for Mr. Norrell here, where he's like, don't laugh at me. You know, creating rain would be very difficult, but
it's hard for me, as always, to feel sorry for Mr. Norrell, because as was going to be said in a few minutes, this is all his damn fault.
But you know, he's just a man. What did we find out back in episode one?
What was that?
There would be two magicians, and one would be called Fearfulness. You know, he's just a scared little man. And you don't feel sorry. You don't have any empathy for him,
Catfish. I've got more empathy for him than I do for Steven.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, leave.
So they do have a nice kind of a little coming to terms here where it's basically Jonathan Strange doesn't have time for
revenge and hatred.
For revenge. He's all he's got time for is, you help me.
Right.
I need to get Arabella back.
Right. My wife is stolen. I'm dying. I love this line where Mr. Norrell's like, you ask something from me? What? And Jonathan Strange is like, what I've always wanted for you. Your help.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I ever wanted. And a little respect.
Just a little bit. Were you happy, Catfish, to see them come together? Or did you want a battle between those two? What did you want?
Oh, no, I didn't care to see a battle between them, because right now I am wrapped up in the same thing that Jonathan Strange is wrapped up in. I've bought into the time constraint of he needs to get Arabella out quick.
Yeah, oh, without
so question. I don't want to see them exhaust themselves fighting each other. Maybe some people did want to see that.
Well, I think certainly the show and the novel try to make you think that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Because they do have reasons to kind of hate each other.
They do. They do. I'm less disappointed than that than in the end, whatever the hell has happened with the Raven King. That's more disappointing to me.
Okay.
When we get there, we can talk about
sure thing.
The appearance, the small things that he does, and then the quick disappearance.
The flyby. He did a flyby.
He did it.
He's a Raven King. He
super
did a flyby.
So one way or the other, either not have him in it, or have him in and have him do something. I mean, I realize he does do something kind of significant. It doesn't seem to really affect the main people we care about. It affects the future. It affects the very last scene. But anyway, we can talk about that.
Well, let's hold off,
because
I have some differing thoughts on that.
I'm as you always do.
So we see Childermas has brought the missing digit to Lady Bull. And I thought it was a bit interesting in that Honeyfoot just let him in. Remember the last time these guys saw each other, they were like, yeah, don't come in here, don't come in here. But when Childermas comes to the door, Honeyfoot lets him right in. And
well, that's because
they show him right to Lady Pole's bed.
That's because we needed to move this part along.
Yeah, let's go. Exactly right. Let's go.
There was no time for explanation.
So when we come in, this is very important. When we come into Lady Pole's bedroom, we see that her husband has been reading Jonathan Strange's letter.
Right.
Uh-oh. And when he sees this missing finger, suddenly he realizes something he must have read in the letter is true, and that is Stephen has been working for an evil fairy.
I'm still a little surprised, though, that the reaction to the pinky was not
ugh.
I would have been like, oh my God, this is crazy. Here's your damn pinky.
Yeah, true. No, I would have been too, been that true. But instead, he just takes all his anger out on Stephen. He says, whose servant have you been?
Mm-hmm.
You've been serving this creature. You served up your lady to a vicious fairy. And Stephen, you don't feel any sad for him. He's kind of had no choice. He even tries to speak freely, which let's be honest, in this situation, would Stephen in his whole life ever been really able to speak freely?
No. And you see what happens? He has a chance to speak freely. And what does he spout? Nonsense.
Wait, catfish. Hold on. You did catfish. You're just all right. So
you know what? The funny thing is, honestly, I would have loved at this point to hear Stephen's rationalization behind everything, to see if even if he was able to say exactly what he wanted to say, whether I would have been like, okay, I understand, because I still.
Well, Stephen, wouldn't the argument be, I'm a powerless person in this world, and then I became a slave to a powerful supernatural creature. I've been tough on Stephen at times in this miniseries.
But not tough enough.
Not in the novel. And so for people who haven't read the novel, that you're going to get a lot more Stephen. And one of the things...
But you'll give to me that in the novel, he's much more sympathetic than he's across in the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things... I was going to go to everybody. We have our podcast about Game of Thrones entitled The Joffrey Podcast. One of the things that can happen is when you have characters who everything is so internal to them, it's sometimes tough to get that across in a visual television film media, because you can't have them suddenly monologue or, you know, have voiceover. And so on Game of Thrones, one of the characters who in that adaptation, which have suffered, I think, is Bran, the little Stark child, because a lot of the things that have happened to him are internal, their dreams, their visions, and also his own thoughts about, spoiler alert, after the first two episodes, he's crippled. And so the show has had a harder time, I think, making him relevant to the TV show and making him a great character, because so much of him on the page is internal. And I wonder if that's a bit true here with Stephen as well, where so much of Stephen's things, you know, he can't come out and say this blows.
Right. I mean, I'd be curious to people who hadn't read the books. I mean, right. Again, I'm not remembering the books either. So I just, but I wonder if people who have not read the books are more sympathetic than I am, or feel the same way I do, that it's, they don't, they haven't gotten enough of to understand exactly where he's coming from.
True.
Because he gave it up super quick.
He, on the
to
show,
the man
right.
with the children. The Childermas hair.
Hey, so, but how about this? When Sir Walter Pole attacks mm-hmm. him and calls Stephen, "You are savage." Oh, ooh, not
yeah,
okay. cool.
Yeah, that
not
is true.
Cool.
That is not cool.
Catfish.
Mm-hmm.
How do people write us and tell us their thoughts on Stephen? How do they reach you on Twitter?
They would hit me up at CJGman67, and they can tell me what a heartless, soulless person I am for not feeling bad for Stephen.
And you can reach me, my name's Bubba, on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And so Stephen gets locked in Vinculus's nut cell.
See, now I would say this. For Lady Pole, we've seen how it has distracted her and driven her crazy and how she feels hopeless.
Right.
And yet, Stephen, even in this world, where you would think he would have more power, has gone along with the man with the thistle down hair. So it's not entirely clear to me that he feels the same way. Confused, but never like...
Right.
Yeah. So that's my problem, I guess.
Back at Hurt Few Abbey, we see Norrell is like, "Listen, your wife is under some sort of bizarre contract, Jonathan Strange, and it's going to be hard to break." Jonathan goes up to his little bowl of water,
mm-hmm.
and he makes a point of light to Holy represent bowl. Lady Pole and Arabella in Lost Hope. And he says, "I know a way we can end this contract that my wife has. Kill the fairy."
Boom. Only one problem with that.
What's that?
According to the man who's got every single book on magic you'd want to have,
yeah.
not possible for an English magician to do it.
Well, there is one guy who's done it, though.
Who dat? Bubba, who dat?
It's Chris Angel. It is the man in black. It is somebody who really could use some conditioner, the Raven King.
John Uskglass.
So
they come up with an idea.
Yeah, well, we're going
to... But before they come up with an idea,
yeah, we got to get to this.
We finally have the conversation we've been waiting to have, and I think it lives up to the expectations that I had for it.
Well, let's set it up. Mr. Norrell is mm-hmm. like, "Kill a fairy. You know, you shouldn't mess with them anymore. You shouldn't mess with them. Something terrible could happen." Jonathan's like, "Hey, I'm dying. My wife's trapped by the fairy. How could it get worse?" And this is kind of the setup to...
Well, he says you could get tricked, and that's what happens when you deal with fairies. And Jonathan Strange is like, "Yeah,
duh,
you know that as well as I do.
Even Mr. Norrell says, "I do not know any creature." He still wants to fight it for a bit.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, if you get that look from Jonathan Strange where he's like half crazy and full serious, and he says, "No more. He cheated you. That's in his nature. And you knew that it was in his nature. You knew." See, Jonathan Strange did not know.
Right.
Mr. Norrell did know.
And Norrell is trying to, you know, come up with excuses. "Well, he tricked me. I only did it once.
Try that with the ladies. See if that works. It was just once, honey."
He's like, "I tried to prevent you from making the same mistake I did." And Strange is, of course, like, "Well, yes, guess what? You know how you could have prevented me from doing it? You could have told me the truth."
right. Try that next time. Go to that first.
Do over.
Right, and again, he said he's the one that opened it. It's not Jonathan Strange that opened the door. It's Mr. Norrell who opened the door
right.
and then couldn't close it again. And, right. and you know, that makes a good point. It's possible to close the door again. We didn't see Norrell try to do any of that. At any point did we see him? He was just like, "You can't do anything about it. It's too hard. You can't."
He just threw up his hands and was like,
mm-hmm.
"Impossible." Once again, they know that.
And then
this is a funny bit
that doesn't take away
right.
really from the rest of it, where he says, where Jonathan Strange says, "There's only one man
only
who
one
can
man.
Do this, only one person."
Right.
And the whole time, Mr. Norrell's got a little half smile on his face, like, "Oh, you know, you still like me. Oh, shucks, you still believe in me." And he's like, "You know what? I actually think that I'm not your superior anymore. All right.
So I mean, you don't want to give him any respect?
He's no. That's what Mr. Norrell says, waiting for Jonathan Strange to say no, but I think you can do it. And Jonathan Strange is like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
Hey,
I'm not talking about you, pal.
So, Catfish.
Mm-hmm.
But you knew. Do you think all the viewers knew that Strange was talking about one guy?
Yeah, absolutely. Strange? Well, at this point, we've seen Norrell has no idea what to do.
And a light rain.
Mm-hmm.
Norrell's got about 1 to 2 inches. Norrell's barely showing up on the Doppler radar with his...
right, the Norrell 7000.
And so, boy, this is a great point. Back with Lady Pole, they're like, you know what? If we do this spell and put her finger back on, you know, mm-hmm. reconnect her with this, she might come back as the way she was when she lost it, a.k.a. dead. Uh-oh.
Right. But at least Walter Pohl, even though he's let his wife be tortured for years and years, has heard one thing she said over and over again, which is, better dead than this.
Now, you say that. Let's just get to it. My second Walter Pohl.
Okay.
The gentleman says, hey, you've been blind to this. You've profited from this.
Mm-hmm.
I think Walter Pohl's getting a bit of a bum rap. He knew something hinky had gone on. But he did ask Mr. Norrell multiple times. He asked Jonathan Strange, hey, does Mr. Norrell say anything about my wife? He didn't he didn't want this for
but
his wife.
But he never demands.
Oh, okay.
Certain point, I would say, hey, look.
No, that's a good call.
I would say, look, I'm glad that my wife is alive.
Yeah.
But clearly, something happened when you brought her back. So
right.
What happened? And listen, she's at the point where she'd rather be dead. So you fix this or help her to do what she wants.
Okay. So then let's put it this way. How much blame does Sir Walter Pohl deserve on a scale of 1 to 10?
For his wife's continuing misery,
yeah.
I'd give him an 8.
Oh, Catfish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Grounds for a divorce?
You know what? When she says, I'm going to go off on my own, the only answer to that is, yes, dear. Can you just leave me maybe 5 pounds a month? She's like, I'm taking 995 pounds a month with me. Suck it.
Okay, so back. This is an intercut episode because so much is happening at once.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the library with Mr. Norrell, Mr. Strange. They're saying, if you're going to summon the Raven King here, you've got to be very specific about his name.
Okay, so good point. Now, this is good. Now, this is the reason why Jonathan Strange needs to have Mr. Norrell. Because even though Jonathan Strange has that touchy-feely magic,
right,
there are some rules.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Norrell knows them all. And he's like, look, we got to go his name. You can't just go, oh, how about John Usglass? That's not his name. That's what people... kind of,
that's what he said his dad's name was, but most people didn't believe, you know, most people say, wait, that can't be right.
Right. It's like when you read a lot of magic books or you see whatever, the important thing is knowing someone's true name.
Yeah. Isn't that in the Kingkiller Chronicles, the great, The Name of the Wind, the first book is great. That's, you got to know somebody's real name.
Right.
And so Jonathan Strange, though, so this is how they work together. And this is what's so great is Mr. Norrell knows that rule about, hey, you got to call somebody by his name. Then Jonathan Strange is like, well, wait a minute. Why don't we use these other elements to summon him? So it's like, we'll tell the stones, these pears, which grew in his garden, in the Raven King's garden.
Well, and not just did they grow in his garden, but they grew from pits that he spit out.
Right, exactly. And so, and the stream and the river that comes by is his waters. So we'll tell the pears in the river and the stones, we'll tell the nature elements, summon the king, and John Usglass, the Raven King, is the only king they know.
Exactly.
So they'll bring him.
So, right. So that's the touchy-feely part of it, where it's like, we use nature. So they work together, and it's kind of exciting and sad to see this is the first time they worked on magic together. Think about this. The entire series, there was magic from Mr. Norrell, magic from Jonathan Strange, but they never said, let's work together on something.
Exactly right.
It's sad. Opportunity missed.
And then we come to the summoning spell, and Strange is like, well, what summoning spell do we want to use? And Mr. Norrell's like, there's one in this book, the best one of all.
Oh.
And whose book is it, Catfish?
I was shocked. He opened up it was in a special case.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why it was in a special case was that was the case to protect it from getting destroyed like all the other copies were.
Right.
It's the copy of Jonathan Strange's book. And he says, this is the most wonderful book of magic I've ever read. And he has thousands of books of magic.
That is a great review. That's the kind you want on Goodreads.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, footnote, everybody, this whole thing, this whole episode, this whole miniseries, the novel, all the seeds are planted. And in fact, he's like, I want you to use the summoning spell that you use to call Maria Absalom. You're exactly right, Catfish. She is the spirit that Jonathan Strange summoned at the beginning of episode 2, where Mr. Segundus entered his dream and saw her.
Right, right.
And so they are going to use this great spell to try and summon, you know who, the king.
The RK, Raven King.
Back at Lady Pol, we see, how do we do this? How are we going to do this? And Childermas is like, come on. We're magicians. We're all magicians.
And now England is chock full of magic. It's everywhere.
Let's do this.
You can touch it. You can feel it.
Ooh, it's magic. And then there's an interesting point that in the letter, it even says, hey, don't connect her finger until I tell you to. But Sir Walter Pol misinterprets that. And he says, wait a minute. Don't tell Jonathan Strange about this. He says, don't reconnect my wife's finger. And so there's a bit of confusion about that. That confusion leads Childermas to go to Stephen, while upstairs Segundus is finding a spell.
And then here's an amazing callback.
Oh, yes, Catfish. I mentioned this in the first episode.
The
Say it.
The spell that Segundus finds is the spell that we saw him, the very first time we saw him, it was a spell he was trying to use to bind two objects.
The pipes, right.
Right, the two objects that were together again. I don't know exactly how he says it.
Right,
but
so the very first scene in the whole miniseries is Segundus breaking those pipes and then trying to use this spell, which we later find out was from Vinculus, to put the pipes together. And of course, when does the spell finally work? It works when we need it to. But of course, too soon. Hashtag too soon.
Exactly. Exactly. And in the meantime, Childermas goes to Stephen, who's in the jail now, and Stephen is saying some things that make sense to us only because we've actually seen them happen.
Right.
If we had not seen them happen, I'd have no idea what Stephen was talking
about.
Right.
So Childermas wants to know what in the world is going on. Why is Strange saying hold off? What's going on?
But of course, he doesn't know. Stephen doesn't know Strange's plan. So all he can do is tell him the freaky shit he just saw go down.
Yeah, he said the man with the answers has been hanged. I helped hang him myself with the gentleman with thistle down here. The man with the book of the Raven King.
Now, let's make this clear. There's two different books of the Raven King.
Right.
Okay, one of them is the child's book of the Raven King, and the other one is what's written on Vinculus's
body.
Oh,
well, I don't think the Raven King wrote a children's history of the Raven King.
Well, just to be clear about that.
And so Stephen says, yes, I hung him in the ravine not far from here. And then Stephen also says, no, you can't reconnect Lady Pol with her finger. You can't bring her back. Why? Because the gentleman with thistle down here will be PO'd and he'll take his revenge on everybody.
Yeah, he'll know. Now, you had to figure that Jonathan Strange's plan, although, again, sometimes I don't pay close attention, but I think whatever plan he had was kind of ruined here.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's not clear what his plan was to get over there. But, you know, before the finger was connected, maybe he was going to have Lady Pol spirit Arabella away.
Yeah, I thought he was going to have Lady Pol spirit Arabella to that mirror in Venice.
While he was distracting,
yeah,
jumping up and down in front of the Thamanthus down here. Look over here, look over here.
And so Childermas realizes, yeah, this could be trouble. He runs to stop it, but Childermas gets there seconds too late. Segundus uses this spell to connect Lady Pol to her finger. And sure enough, as she's in a dance move, spinning away from the gentleman, she spins all the way out of Lost Hope.
And let me say this, throughout the rest of this episode,
yeah,
the man with the thistle down hair, I have never seen someone so on screen quietly enraged.
Yeah.
He is, the quiet rage he does is frightening.
He is great.
You do not want to be in his path.
Let's give a special shout out. We talk about all the great acting.
Let's shout it out
to him. This is Mark Warren. His acting in this is so incredible. Lady Pole comes back and she's got all her wits. She's no longer insane. But
what's funny is
she's not happy to be back.
She's been wanting to be released forever and ever. But then all of a sudden she's like, no, no, it's too soon because Arabella's going to be lost. Now, I got to say, she's a better person than me because I would have been like, thank God for getting me out of there.
Hey.
Arabella's got to take care of her own business.
No.
I mean, come on, Lady Hope fell out of favor. You know what? If you're going to fall out of favor, at least just stop dragging me here. You know what I mean? Don't drag me here and then make me second fiddle to Arabella.
In the library, Jonathan Strange sees that one of those things in his bowl of water, one of the light representing Lady Pole has disappeared.
Gone.
And he realizes, oh, crap, this is too soon. We're not ready. We've got to do it right now. We've got to go. This intercuts with a great bit of directing and camera move. We see Childermass. He's like, I'm going to go to the ravine. And it's from Steven's point of view. He watches him leave through the cell door.
Right, and then
the camera pans. But
what happens is we see Steven, and then we go over the shoulder, the point of view from Steven,
right.
And then the camera pans, and then we see the man with the thistle down hair.
Great reveal.
Oh,
I love that camera.
And let me just, again, let's just make this clear. The man with the thistle down hair is not happy.
No, and do you want to represent Team Gentleman with Thistle Down Hair here, Catfish?
Do I?
He signed a contract. He got half of Lady Pole's life, and this is somebody breaking the contract. Take him to court.
I guess you could, but I mean, that all depends on your feeling about the validity of oral contracts vis-a-vis Steven.
Wait, no, he made the contract with Mr. Norrell.
No, but I'm just saying, yes, he made, like, in other words, he makes contracts, some that are binding, but also he doesn't seem quite so responsible himself. He's not above hoodwinking people.
Not at all. So, Strange and Norrell, they are going to summon this Raven King. Norrell's nervous. The flame is flickering as it shakes in his unsteady hand. And Strange says, you know.
Now, Strange is so funny because it's like the pupil has become the master here.
Yeah.
Because, again, as you said, Norrell is the one that's afraid.
Right.
And Strange is the one who, he's not afraid of doing magic. Not at this point, anyway.
He's still almost a bit reckless, though, which was
Absolutely.
Always kind of been Strange's
Absolutely.
Fault. In that Mr. Norrell, once again, you don't want to join on Team Norrell. He's like, you've been in the darkness longer than I have. If you shall die, I'll spend the rest of my life trying to free your wife.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. He's the kind of guy who makes promises, and then when the person's gone, he's like, you know, I kind of meant that.
I know. Give it up for Team Norrell, you jerk. This is intercut with Childermass finding the body in the ravine, as well as Thistledown just being so upset. It's rare that anyone released from an enchantment is permitted to live long. Not if I have enchanted them. Look at the anger on his face.
And then the door just pops off. And then we go back to Strange and Norrell. And they're doing the chant to get the guy. And then we go intercut again with Childermass cutting down Vinculus.
Yeah.
There's so much going on here back and forth.
It is all right now. So, Catfish, you asked throughout this miniseries if we would see the Raven King.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are about to finally see him. Are you glad we saw him, or should he have always been an idea, a thought?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't know whether now's the right time to talk about it, because he does do some things, but I would have thought that he, if we're going to actually see him, that he would have been more an effective force. In other words, we see him, they've called him for a very specific reason, and pretty much like the man with the thistle down hair, he says, okay, you called me.
Later.
But better than the man with the thistle down hair, because the man with the thistle down hair has to stay. He's just like, I'm out of here.
Right.
He's got his own agenda. Whoa.
He is that powerful, right? The gentleman with thistle down hair stays until the candle's out.
Mm-hmm.
The Raven King, he's like, enough is enough.
And then the Raven King goes to where Vinculus's body is.
I heard that Vinculus is hard to kill, Catfish.
Yeah.
It's not that he's hard to kill, it's hard for him to stay dead.
Right. They should have been more specific. You can't kill me, it's just staying dead. And then Childermass is like, okay, you can't do anything. And basically, with just a wave of his hand, the Raven King is like, you're nothing. Quiet.
Right, so let's just finish up the Raven King's bit of business.
Well, but let's keep going because
you
want to
keep cutting back and forth?
Yeah, let's keep cutting back and forth because what's happening here is,
right.
Okay, let's go ahead. Let's stay with the Raven King, because and then we can figure out what Strange and Norrell are trying to do here. Because at the time it was going on, I was like, I wasn't quite sure whether what they were doing was effective, and things happened very fast. So okay,
they did. So fine. The Raven King sees Vinculus's body dead, and he goes over to it, and he erases his book and prophecy that was on Vinculus, and creates a new writing on him.
Right. So it's a new prophecy. Book. And so a what this prophecy. Means is this could be better for our friend, because the old prophecy said
the magicians will fail.
It's doomed for the magicians. Right. Exactly. So he redoes it on his body. He puts a little chestnut in Vinculus's mouth. That's the chestnut of life.
And then he leaves and he's gone. Right. We don't ever see him again, Catfish. So once again, I am going to say what this reminds me of is almost some biblical movies. When you have biblical movies, you know, like the Lord or Jesus, they're not in the movie much. You know, it's like the story of Moses, and the Lord shows up, you know, he has powers a couple times, but in the classic one with Charlton Heston, he's just a bush that's barely in the movie. So he's like, the Lord is the big thing, the Lord powerful.
Okay.
But he's just kind of like this thing in it. And so that's what this kind of reminds me
well,
of.
Well, he's literally a deus ex machina here.
Yeah.
In that he comes in, but I get he's not a full deus ex machina, because instead of fixing everything, the only one thing that he does is he changes the prophecy, which we don't see how that affects anything that happens. We have no idea, except for the magicians were supposed to fail. In the end, the question is, you know, what were the magicians' full plan? Did they fail? It feels like they at least partially succeeded and partially failed.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of...
But then if you believe Vinculus near the end, when they see Hurtview Abbey sucked up into the Black Tower and disappear, Vinculus says that the two magicians were a spell that the Raven King cast.
Now that's an interesting question too. I mean we believe they were real people. It's not that they weren't real people.
Right.
But in other words, if they
it's
were
almost like it was fate. They had no choice but to do this stuff.
Right. Like he was, you know, whatever, he set these things in motion. You can believe that in some way, because magic didn't appear for like 300 years.
Yeah.
So you can believe, but then if you believe that, then what do you believe? Do you believe that John Usclass set all this in motion just to take care of one mischievous fairy?
Well, maybe if he left because he's like, fairies keep stealing humans, he had to set up some way to take out maybe the worst fairy of all, the one who keeps stealing humans.
Okay. All right. That's a possibility.
But this is...
I'll go with that.
This is...
Is that your final answer?
I'm not sure there is one. Did you like the look of the Raven King? This look that he has of the goth.
I mean, we do another podcast on The Strain, and this reminds me of the neutered rock musician.
Spoiler alert, Bolivar. You're right. Bolivar's put in double time this week.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of an Alice Cooper kind of feel.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very goth. It's exactly what you expect from the Raven King. Not surprising.
So Strange is going nuts. He's like, I needed the Raven King here. We summoned him, but he left. What is going on? I was going to give him all of English's magic. So we've got to summon him again. We got to get him back here. What's his name? What's his actual name? And so Norrell's like, listen, we don't know his name. He's too powerful. He came and he left it. Strange is like, well, didn't he go by other things? He went by the Black King, the King in the North,
right, the nameless slave.
And so he's like, we've got to get him back here. We're going to get him back here, and I'm going to give him all of England's magic.
So what's interesting is they were very smart and very precise before.
Right.
And they were actually called the Raven King. This second time, it's a little hurried, they're imprecise, and they do something totally wrong.
Right. And so we're about to see that he's like, we see Stephen realizes that, you know, this is all cut so quick, it's tough to jump back and forth like we're trying to do with the show. But Stephen is out of his cell, and he realizes this is trouble. Lady Pole busts out, Walter Pole busts out, everybody busts out, and they can all see you-know-who. the gentleman with thistle down hair. This is a great scene. Walter Pohl tries to stand in front of his wife, and she's like, F you. Get me in front.
And yeah, right. She's ready to take a revenge.
She is just very insulting for this day and age. She calls him a boar.
Yeah, yeah.
Uncivilized.
Unsightly and filthy.
Yeah.
And also, I believe, yeah, she slanders his clothes. I think he's dressed quite nicely.
And his hair. Ouch. God, for people, you know, listen, my hair is not great. When people make fun of it, I get very upset. Team Gentleman with Thistledown Hair.
Wow, and he does not, oh yeah, he's very upset by the Thistledown part. Basically, she slanders him with like 10 different things, and all he hears is, Thistledown?
Right.
It's like when you say to a woman, you're like, my God, you are the craziest, hottest woman I've ever seen. And they go, you think I'm hot?
Yeah. Now, Catfish, what comes out? What does Honeyfoot pull out again?
He pulls out the blunderbuss. The blunderbuss full of walnuts.
And this has to be the most ineffective.
What's nice ineffective is he doesn't attack. Even have to turn around to know
right.
that the that it was walnuts.
No.
And the look on Mark Forster's face
Mark
after
Warren's,
he gets shot,
yeah.
Mark Warren's face after he gets shot, is amazing.
And so once again, this is a bit light. We're having humor, and it's about to not be humorous at all anymore. So back in the library, Mr. Norrell's like, hey, you got to give him some token. Just like Lady Pole gave up a token of her finger, you've got to give
good point.
The Raven King a token to show you're going to give him all this magic.
And what could that possibly be, Bubba?
Well, I'm holding all these... Uh-oh... I'm holding all these books. Maybe some pears? Do you think he'd like some pears?
And Norrell says, no. How about a few? And
right.
then Strange makes a good point.
What?
Yes, I'm sorry. The most powerful magician of the age. Here are a few books?
I thought maybe they could do a BBC America thing and say, here are three bookmarks, Raven King.
You should be satisfied with the three.
Right.
Continue being awesome. That's all you have to do. You know what? Let's give three bookmarks to the Raven King and tell him he's awesome.
Right.
Continue being awesome, right. Raven King, and take these three bookmarks.
Okay. So our guys who are trying to protect Lady Pole, they are not doing too well. Secundus is like, Lady Pole is under our protection. And the gentleman is like, shut the blank up. He steals Secundus's mouth. Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
So which is the worst suffering? Then he steals Honeyfoot's ears and turns them into like a butterfly that flies away. Ow.
Yeah, that's, I mean, just take someone's mouth as something, but to make a butterfly to someone's ears, that's a little embarrassing.
That is brutal. But then Sir Walter Pole, here he is. Here's where he's saying, you know, you won't lay a hand on my woman. And here's where the gentleman's taking your position. Like, hey, it's been all these years. You haven't said nothing. Shut it. And he takes Sir Walter Pole's eyes.
Well, he leaves his eyes. In other words, they're still in his socket, but he takes away any vision from her.
Oh, painful. Then Lady Pole starts talking trash, and that representation of the flower in her mouth.
Exactly, the rose in her mouth.
We can actually
see
it.
Yeah,
oh,
finally we see that.
This is so painful, terrible, and I love the shh, 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 the gentleman does. He puts a finger to his mouth. He's like, shut up, lady. He is completely full bad.
Yeah, but he's taking care of everybody, except for Stephen. He's got other plans for Stephen, and he gives him the sword again. Remember, he had the sword before. He was going to take
King
out
George.
King George, until King George was disappeared the hell out of there.
And Stephen is trying to fight. The gentleman's like, this man has treated you like a slave. And Stephen's like, he's made me as much a slave as you have. While in the library, Jonathan Strange, of course, is saying things that just aren't the Raven King's actual name.
No, and they're not a description of the Raven King at all,
but a description of
Stephen.
The Black King, the King in the North, the nameless slave. I want to give him all of English magic as long as he will strike down and destroy the Master of Lost Hope. Kill him!
Now, see, what I thought was going to happen was that Stephen was just going to immediately
turn around
and
strike. Oh, that would
have
been awesome. That would have been
right?
awesome.
Right? Because that's what he commanded him to do. He didn't command him to show up at the library.
Oh, actually, he did. One little line was like, he said, come here. In the books, I think this is a great effect. I'm not actually sold on some of the effects like the Black Tower, but I love the effect of the books turning into the ravens and flying away.
Yeah, that was amazing, and I agree with you about the Black Tower.
Yeah, well, the Black Tower wasn't even how I imagined it from the books. It doesn't look like that. It looks you know, the, dare I say it, the Lost effect, the TV show Lost, where everything's a black cloud.
Right.
So the ravens come and steal away Stephen right when he was about to strike down.
And the man's pistol down here is like, WTF, man, what do I have to do here?
What's going on?
Man,
I was dancing with Lady Pole. She gets taken away. Stephen and I were going to kill these terrible Englishmen, and he gets
this. This doesn't make any sense to me at all. And so then what happens is all the ravens show up, and then in the library at Hertfield Abbey, and...
Do you think Norrell's like, my books are back?
Well, you notice there are some pages there. You could put together a mix of spells.
A pamphlet, right.
Yeah. And then we see Stephen, who is just as confused to be there...
Oh, yeah.
...as Strange and Norrell are to see them.
They're like, that's not the Raven gig.
And then before I can figure out what the hell's going on here, because I hadn't figured out what's going on... Then Stephen gets shot, and I'm like, what is going on now?
And who is it? It's Henry Lascelles.
What a dick.
Oh, my God. Did you like that Lascelles came back, that he found his way through the labyrinth just in time to F up all the plans?
I didn't realize he was going to be the one I hated almost as much as Stephen.
No. Well, you know who hates Lascelles almost as much as you do, Catfish?
Who is that?
The gentleman with Thistle down here.
And why does he hate him?
Well, he killed Stephen. He shot Stephen.
Well, this is something we'll bring up in a second when we get to Lost Hope about the man with the Thistle down here's feelings towards Stephen. But for now... the man with thistle down here shows us the best magic he has. Forget taking away someone's mouth or making a butterfly out of someone's ears. How about making a set of fine china out of someone's entire body?
Yes, is that our wedding pattern on?
I think he might be my magician of the week.
Wait, the gentleman?
The
or?
Gentleman with the thistle down here.
Oh no!
I mean, look at that.
And I do actually like Lascelles' eyes.
Yeah, there's a little bit you can see his eyes, and he steps down him. And I did like that special effect.
Well, to Mark Warren, I always say he doesn't fit the image I had of the gentleman with thistle down here, but this yell here where he stretches his face and it becomes preposterously thin and he's so angry, that is the look. That is how I imagined him, with kind of like the pointy nose and the stretched face. And he takes Stephen away to Lost Hope as the Black Tower sucks more life out of Strange and
Norrell. So this is my question to you.
Sure.
Is that the man with the thistle down hair seems to have a different impression of the way he comes off. In other words, he really seems to be sad here about Stephen.
Oh, he is. I think he's totally sad.
Yeah, but... honestly, he could give a crap about Stephen. You know what I mean? Like, he has a different opinion of the way he treats people than he actually treats them.
He's not human. Would you say that Thistledown more often treats Stephen like you would treat a pet that you loved? You know, you love the pet, but you kind of force the pet to do whatever.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Although you don't so often say to your pet that you're going to raise them up as a king. So,
if you love your pet, Catfish.
Okay, I'm sorry. I should have raised my pet up as a kid.
One time.
So, that just seemed a little, just something I had to think about. Because, again, we've seen the man with thistle down here be what he thinks is nice to Stephen.
Right.
But never to this point. To see how much he feels for Stephen, cares for Stephen, because he treats everybody like garbage.
So Jonathan and Norrell are really just destroyed. Jonathan Strange says, I don't have it. I can't get back to Lost Hope. He's closed the doors to me.
But who can?
Yeah, he hasn't closed them to Norrell. And Norrell, his skill in making it partly cloudy.
He's going to use his partly cloudy spell, and he's going to squish up his eyes real tight and do that special hand thing that he does.
Yes, the rain has made a door for me, and I shall go through it. Exactly what Vinculus was singing in the last episode.
Oh, good thing you're paying attention.
Yes, good thing one of us are. And then here... You know, I love this humor. It's just at this time.
The joy that Norrell has, it's...
Right, it's misplaced. Norrell, well, you guys are in deep trouble.
The problem is this. Pretty much any other time, I would have... You know, we've been...
Yeah, exactly.
Every time Norrell's been a little happy or shown... You know, a little light into his life. We've enjoyed it, and we've been happy for him, even though he set this whole calamitous situation in into place. But to have it happen now, I can't focus on his joy. It's weird.
He is so happy to be in Faerie, but it's like, you can't be happy to be here. You got to be focused on the mission, buddy.
Well, the one thing that does make me feel, I mean, it felt less inappropriate when I found out that because they were there, that Jonathan Strange and he weren't laboring under the same threat of death.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, frolicking around while Nora was, while Strange is growing closer and closer to death is inappropriate, but it's less inappropriate when they just have to face almost certain death by facing the man with the thistle-down hair.
So the plan is, they've given all of English magic to Stephen. And if they can reach him before his final breath, they saw him shot, they think he's going to die. If they can reach him before his final breath, maybe they can...
But what they're not aware of, he took him to Lost Hope, which is a very magical place. So if you're full of magic and you're in Lost Hope, I don't think a mortal wound is going to do it.
Oh, hell no. And even the gentleman, when he sees Stephen back to life, and he's like, Stephen, you're full of magic. He doesn't have a big smile on his face.
He's shocked. He's like, oh my God, what's going on here?
Strange and Neural, they sneak in, and this is where I'm just kind of torn, because I am going to laugh. Neural trying to blend in is actually funny, but this is the climax, and so I'm not sure I want.
Right.
You know, this isn't Ghostbusters. He's dancing this.
Who are you going to call? Neural.
Who are you going to call? Someone practical. Someone respectable.
Yes, exactly. So then Stevens just starts to go off.
Right. He's getting a power trip, literally.
Right. He's like, and then he's like, I feel power. And then Norrell's yelling at him, it's the power of English magic, sir. You're full of it. You're full of it, sir.
And for my nominee for second magician of the week.
Yes.
For being able, I've been dancing, but it is hard. You've got to use magic if you want the dance floor to open up and create some space for you so you can go solo dance.
Right. You like that Saturday Night Fever moment that happened with Norrell?
Right. Oh, I call this the Soul Train dance line, where it's like everybody gets out of the way so Norrell can just bust his moves down the middle.
It's the soul magic.
Right, exactly. Nothing wrong with a little English dancing.
As long as it's respectable dancing, sir.
Norrell's wig is...
frightful.
Frightful, in a state of frightful. The gentleman, he's just about to head it with these English magicians. He's about to cast a spell when who comes up and just touches him, and oh crap, the power has shifted.
Right, and what's interesting, he says, we're going to be kings, and you know... And the man with the stone hair said, yes, I will be the king here, and you'll be the king in England. Right. And Stephen's like... Well,
the prophecy just said that I would kill a king and become king.
So...
You're a king? Two plus two.
Listen, I don't want to have to go find the other guy. I'm right here already.
Jonathan, meanwhile, has got to break the enchantment on Arabella. And this is maybe a fairy tale moment. How is he going to break the enchantment? But with a kiss.
Right. Sealed with a kiss. In the meantime... Stephen is feeling his oats.
He's planting a tree. He's putting some fertilizer in this tree.
I mean, first of all, he talked about the stones, and he puts his foot down, and it's like an earthquake.
He's like, I control the wind, I control the stone, I control the trees. And Arabella and Jonathan, this is the moment where I really felt for them. I really liked their reunion. And the person who I felt bad for was Thistledown. This is a bad way to go. Of all the bad ways to go, being eaten by a tree and being ripped apart by a tree, that's pretty bad.
The interesting thing to me is it's almost the reverse when you look at it. It's almost like the reverse, you could play it in reverse, and it'd be like the birthing of Moss O'Gay.
Right. Yeah, this is going back into the womb of the tree right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and it is creepy. But this... Where Arabella says, "Promise, do you promise me, Jonathan?" And of course he doesn't, because he knows he may not be able to follow her. That was another emotional strong moment for me. Arabella tumbles into Venice. We remember in episode 2, Arabella had said when she saw those paintings that she always wanted to visit Venice.
And look, here it is.
Yeah, this is probably not the way she wanted to get there.
Well, how else would you want to get there? I mean, back in that day... You had to take a
boat. Yeah,
take a boat or whatever. This is the best way to go. I'd still rather go this way today.
Wait, years in Lost Hope and then getting to go?
Oh, well, just minus the years in Lost Hope. If it was like a couple hours in Lost Hope, I'd be fine.
Mr. Norrell yells to Stephen. He's like, Stephen, let us help you. And Stephen, power crazy, powerful Stephen, has this glow in his eye and he just yells, go. Thistledown begs one last time. He's like, Stephen, I can tell you your real name. And Stephen's like, I am the nameless slave. I am the king of Lost Hope. There's no masters for me now. Suck it.
Yeah, exactly. You know what my name is? My name is, it must suck to be you, Thistledown. That's what my name is.
You want to know what my name is now? You're dead.
So he wants him to be, so now Stephen is the king, but it seems to me like he's immediately decided he's going to renovate his kingdom.
Yeah, like I said, he's going to flip Lost Hope, tear down the walls, do some things.
Right, he's going to just do a full whiteout on it.
Norrell and Strange jump into the rain and they get the door back to the library. Strange can see in his magic bowl that Arabella is in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We think everything's great. We think we've got the happy ending. Norrell's like, hey, I don't know how we did it, but we're the only English magicians who've killed a fairy.
Not only that, he says great things. He's like, we did it. We're buddies. You are my great friend.
Right. Jonathan Strange says that, and that's important, is that Strange could, after everything, still kind of hate Norrell. But instead, he's like, listen, English is now
full of magic. He makes one last pitch for his beliefs.
Right.
And then he says, you're a great magician, Mr. Norrell, and you're my friend. Well, listen, if there's two things you could say to make Mr. Norrell feel great,
yeah,
one of them would be, you are a great magician, and the other one would be, you are my friend. And so that's it.
You think it's a happy ending, but we see Jonathan can't leave.
I was confused at first. I thought, was this a dream thing? And then I figured out, okay, he got kind of teleported back to there. It would have been clear if he'd like bounced off the wall or something, but right. To get like shot into Mr. Norrell was a little confusing to me at first.
I don't want to explain too much about how the book explains this.
Okay.
But yeah, these guys are still trapped in the Black Tower. Even though Thistledown is dead, the Black Tower is still there.
Well, that's my only question was, okay, Thistledown has been kind of consumed by the tree.
Right.
But just like whatever happened with Strange and Norrell at the end, that doesn't mean that he is dead.
Well, I would say that Lady Pole was released. When we see Walter Pole later, he has two eyes. When we see Segundus and Honeyfoot, they have a mouth and ears again. I think this was just a special spell that, remember, when he cast it on Jonathan, it took a lot out of Jonathan. I'm sorry, it took a lot out of the Thistledown here. Right. And so maybe it's an everlasting spell. And I'll just say once again about the book and about if whether Strange and Norrell are alive or dead at the end of this. I would say the book has a bit more. I don't want to spoil it for people who may read the book
later. All right, but it has a bit more.
A bit more, but it's still this general idea. They have disappeared as the Black Tower disappeared, taking Hurtfew Abbey with it.
Boom! Well, you don't need to worry about all those empty bookshelves then.
And of course, is this a happy ending? Is it a bittersweet ending? How would you call this ending, Catfish?
Well, I'd have to say it's bittersweet because for Jonathan Strange, he couldn't live without Arabella. And I think Arabella's going to be fine because, like I said, she's going to find someone non-magical like me or you to spend time with.
Yes.
Right? And we're happy to be non-magical with her. Or Bane.
Right, since she's the wife of Hardy.
Oh, all right. Well, fine. I don't know. It seems to me like I'd be far more disappointing than he is and less magical.
Yeah, that's for sure. Way to go.
I guess all she cares about is magic.
Welcome to York's Reckoning. All right, so we come to...
Hello, my lady. How are you? Again.
So we come to the denouement, and we see the Pole family dinner is mm-hmm. just awkward and terrible. We see that, according to Pole, he believes Lord Wellington, even though he's tainted with magic, will probably be the new prime minister. And, of course, Lady Pole, he asks her the dumbest question. Lady Pole, do you still like dancing? Oh, what an idiot.
Lady Pole has the, I believe you call it the id gas. I don't give a shit.
She's like,
all right, well, this has been not fun at all, so I'm out of here.
Right. She says she's going to go help her friend on the continent. And we cut to that friend on the continent, and it's Arabella. She's here with Flora Greysteel.
Mm-hmm.
And Greysteel, Miss Greysteel is just saying, He loved you so much, Arabella. He was desperate to be with you.
But it seemed like I was interested in him. If you didn't come back, I would have taken him.
Right, exactly. She brings,
because I like the bad boys.
Right. She brings Arabella to the place. She says the people of Venice feel it's haunted. Arabella goes in.
So I was wondering, if it's haunted, you could probably get it for a good price.
Oh, in Venice, everything's expensive. I think, you know, the haunted discount of 10%. What do you think?
I'll take whatever I can get.
Oh, yeah. Arabella goes. All the mirrors are smashed, but she can hear her husband calling to her.
Mm-hmm.
I'll only say that this felt that their kind of denouement scene in the novel hit me a bit stronger than this one did.
I will say this, not remembering that this was not my favorite ending.
Well, you like that he says don't live as a widow. You
only know, because then I thought I had a shot. But now that okay. I found out she's with Tom Hardy, I don't care anymore.
He tells her he's just a reflection and that he's not even sure where he is. They had one goodbye kiss, and that goodbye kiss was him getting her to remember her magic.
Right, so maybe she doesn't remember herself, that.
Right.
Again.
And she says she's miserable. She says that if he can't...
She'll wait.
Yeah, and he says, don't wait.
Right.
But she says, you will find a spell to get out of this. And she says, if you don't, I will. Is Arabella our next magician, Catfish?
Our magician of the week?
No, well, she could be. Do you want to?
Well, that's another question, and we're going to have another ending, which is a little bit more satisfactory to me. And that's the question: is there magic still in England?
Well, there are no magic books anymore. Or I guess one magic book.
Right, and we know that there was one guy that didn't need magic books. And that was Strange.
Yeah.
But everyone else kind of needed magic. I mean, even Strange needed magic at the beginning to figure out where he was going. So you'd say, yes, there's magic in England, but no one can practice it because there's no magic books.
So some years ago, there was, in the city of York, a society of magicians. We're back to where we all started, Catfish, at the Stair Inn. And the team is getting back together.
Oh,
my third
squad.
Nominee. Her magician of the week is right? Dr. Foxcastle's back. He's ready. And who else is back but Mr. Gatcombe and right. Mr. Tatney.
And what's hilarious is these guys are just talking smack. They're
right.
Children Mass hasn't even cleared them yet, and they're already
right.
talking
He's like,
smack.
I met Mr. Strange. He's a book thief and a murderer. He certainly murdered his wife, and probably Mr. Norrell, too.
The confusion, the stuff that's going on already is horrible.
But was the society, you would say, at the beginning, way back in the first episode, was the Magician Society, was it all kind of upper crust people? And we see that now... They're letting in people like Childermas. They're letting in women, for gosh sakes.
Well, is the woman who was in jail with Drawlight, is she there?
No, she's I don't see her. But I wonder if this is the other woman, the woman that we never met, who we found out gave Drawlight a lot of money. I wonder if that's her.
Well, the interesting thing is that at least it seems like before, they thought it was beneath them to study actual magic. They were studying the history of magic.
Right. They're going to get on with actual magic now, I would say.
And now what is exciting is they are going to, because there is a magic book that is left.
Right.
And this is very interesting, because when he was talking about it, I thought, oh my God, he must be talking about the Raven King's book. And even though I saw Vinculus come in, I was still thinking, are you talking about that little stupid children's history of the Raven King?
No, it's Vinculus. Never misses a moment to strip down and show off the glutes.
No, and there is a funny moment here where your boy is not impressed by Vinculus.
Dr. Foxcastle immediately is like, what's that smell? Yeah. Deodorant.
Yeah, and Vinculus, death has not slowed down his sense of humor.
He's sassy, no. Yeah. He's like, I could be a cookbook. I could be some stupid prayers.
No, I could be a self-help book.
Right. But he also says...
I could be a pamphlet on saving water.
He also says that perhaps he's a novel. And maybe this is a little shout-out to the idea that Susanna Clarke is writing another novel, but it would be about Vinculus and Childermas.
Well, but the other thing that it could be is, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It could be you know, the Raven King does that at the end of everything that transpires. So perhaps he's a novel of what happened in Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Right.
It doesn't have to be another novel. It could be basically he is what everything that happened up in, including, you know, when Strange and Norrell got whisked away.
That's completely true, Catfish. Now let's get to the end, the ending of the seven episodes we've been on. Mr. Segundus asks, what happened to them? Where are Strange and Norrell? And Childermas gets the final line. He says, I do not know. Wherever magicians used to go, perhaps. Beyond the sky.
And
on the other side of the rain.
Oh, that's the rain that Norrell made. And at least there's someone not confused or concerned at the end of an episode. The final one is Childermas looking at him like he's telling him a ghost story. Ooh.
Well, Catfish, that's it.
That is it. We've it is done the it. End. The seven episodes, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, or Norrell.
Hey, folks, we've got a lot to cover still, and oh, we're 90 minutes into this, so we're going to try to get through everything. Like we said, we hope to have kind of a true wrap-up podcast where we cover the Blu-ray, maybe some bonus features, other things that have come out. But let's burn through everything we have right now. Catfish, do you want to list our new respectable magicians?
Oh, we've got respectable magicians.
Finally, yeah. Let's hear it.
Well, we have Craig J. Clark.
Hey.
Who is coincidentally at Craig J. Clark.
On Twitter. Great.
We have Cammy Settle at Cammy Settle.
Yeah.
K-A-M-M-I-E-S-E-T-T-L-E.
Yes, thank you.
We've got at Dadzee, D-A-D-Z-E-E.
Very respectable.
At Kathy underscore Parson 5.
Hey, hey.
We've got Andrew Gooderham at D. Ruderham.
Woohoo!
We've got Peter at Baga 2007.
Welcome.
We've got at Sarah H. Medusky. We've got Lynn at On Stray Sod.
Hey, yeah.
D. Joe at My Cousin Moss.
Yeah.
My Cousin M-O-S.
Yeah.
And we've got Ben Hansen at Buko underscore NZ.
Oh, Ben wow. is one of our good friends from the Joffrey podcast. He's over in New Zealand.
What?
Wonderful. We love him.
You should go to New Zealand and hang out with Ben.
No, I
instead
would.
Instead of all your listeners in Ireland.
I'm going to Ireland, landing in Ireland a week from now. That's the time if you want to rob my condo. Please come rob it then because I'm out of the country. I want to thank Joe on Twitter who's been great. She's been great giving me things to do at Ireland. So we got... People know the giveaways are now, so we've got a bunch of... Those people are entered into the drawing. We just listened.
Right?
We got a bunch of new iTunes reviews.
Holy cow.
And they are in the drawing as well. Catfish, why don't you read the first one?
I will. It's by Celestina118. It says, Very fun podcast, five stars.
Thank you.
I've recently delved deep into everything JSAMN related, the book, interviews, etc., and this podcast was one of my favorite finds. These guys have so much enthusiasm about the show/book, and you can feel them having just so much fun through your speakers. In parentheses, every time the footnote bell rings, I smile with glee. Yes. It's a shame that the show is only seven episodes and almost over, but this is a wonderful companion after each episode. I can't wait to begin my rewatch with Lost Hope in hand. Awesome job, guys. Yeah, that is a sweet one. I like that one.
Thank you so much. Catfish, read that next one.
I will. It says magically delicious. Just like Lucky
Don't
Charms.
Don't you mean they're magically delicious?
I do. I think you should use that when you're in Ireland.
When listen, you got to speak the language while you're there.
You do, when in Rome. Five stars by Ellis Blaze.
Ooh-hoo.
It says, I have been a double L? Loyal listener
of
this podcast since the very first installment, before Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell even aired in the U.S.
Hey.
After watching each new episode of this fantastic show, I look forward to listening to Catfish and Bubba's take on it. These two guys are hilarious and make my long commute more bearable.
We're trying.
I'll miss the show when it ends after Sunday, and I'll miss spending my Monday mornings with Bubba and Catfish.
Woohoo.
Oh, man, that
Thank
is nice.
Thank you so much. Here, let me read one, because we've got so many we got to
burn. Yeah, why don't you? It's our old friend, Patman23.
Patman, a wonderful friend of ours. Follow him on Twitter, everybody. He gave us a five-star review. He said, nothing could be more agreeable than to be listening to this podcast. I was not as wise as the worthy gentleman who hosts this podcast. I'm abashed to admit that I had not been watching the televised adventures of Jonathan Strange or Mr. Norrell.
What?
But the Twitter feed from Mr. Bubba and Mr. Catfish was so compelling, with footnotes in regard to the show, that I found the resolve to entreat my lovely wife, Arabella, or Mrs. Batman, that this show might be something we should experience. The program is, of course, extraordinary, and I'm pleased that the attendant podcast is a delight to hear. I have the book somewhere on one of my many bookshelves that bedeck my stately, if weedy, manor. And once I have seen the show and listened to this podcast from my heroes, I might attempt to read the novel to see if, like Bubba, I find it wonderful, or if, like Catfish, I find it a chore.
Yes.
Thank you for turning me on to the show with enthusiasm. Hip, hip, huzzah.
Oh, hip, huzzah.
Thank you, Batman. We've got three more to go, so let's burn.
Holy cow, let's go through this. All right. Crelew, C-H-R-I-L-E-W, says, so great that my only option is a good one.
Well,
I feel lucky that the one podcast I could find based on one of my favorite shows, based on one of my favorite books, happens to be so enjoyable. Thanks especially to Bubba for recognizing the greatness of this doorstop of a book.
Hey!
And kudos to Catfish for his open-minded and honest take on the TV show.
All right.
By the way, my fiancé, who managed to listen to four Game of Thrones casts, loves the Joffrey of cast, and is stoked I'll be able to talk to him about it next season.
That is wonderful.
That is great. All right, we've got a couple more here.
Couple more.
Why don't you go ahead for that one?
All right, we got a review here from A Bad Poet with Dreams. It's a 5-star review. It says, this podcast is definitely a friend of English magic.
Okay.
I have never written an iTunes review before, despite listening to many podcasts in my time.
Right.
But I absolutely had to review this one because it is both extremely fun to listen to and extremely well put together. The conversations are always great. The recap of the episodes are thorough and enthusiastic. And I love that we listeners get two viewpoints on the source material. A Bad Poet with Dreams, they say they've read the book 4 times. It's one of their favorite books. Clark is a genius. You guys are doing the Raven King's work in getting word about this absolutely fantastic television show out there. And I think you serve as a solo, sole podcast representative of the show admirably. Also, I'm glad you singled out Bertie Carvel for his acting in these last few episodes because he is, all caps, incredible, and most reviewers focus more on Marzen. Both gentlemen are outstanding in their roles.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, this podcast has been an absolute joy to listen to, and I will be sad to hear it end this next week. Almost as sad as I will be to see the show end. They have already watched episode 7 in A Lover of the Books. She was impressed, or he was impressed, with how it wrapped up. 10 out of 10, loved it. Thanks for the good work, chaps. Fingers crossed that I get the giveaway. I'm looking at you, BBC. Okay, so we got...
Amazing.
We got another review. I'll read
this one. Yeah, go ahead, read that one,
quick. All right, so we got one.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a funny 5-star review.
Okay, what's
because
it say?
The title of the review is Heather.
Okay, Heather.
And it's by Beat GA. Now,
okay,
I'm pretty sure this is Beat Georgia. If your name is Heather, I went to the University of Georgia, and I don't like anybody saying Beat Georgia.
Wow,
so
okay.
this is tough. But a 5-star review, it says, great podcast, can't wait to read the book. And we had a review from the wonderful Kingdom of Switzerland, Catfish.
Oh my God, in Switzerland. They're holding on to all the Nazi gold. All right. It says, great. It's 5-star. It's by Podcast Pal.
Oh, great.
That's PDP.
Yeah.
It says, ignore the terrible intro music.
It says what?
Ignore the terrible intro music.
I spent like half an hour working on that intro music. Hey.
This podcast is the perfect accompaniment to the TV show.
Oh, thank
you. You know,
you
that's
very
the
much.
First time I think that anybody has criticized any of the technical aspects of this show,
they should.
Which are quite lacking.
No,
but that's the first time we've ever got any of that.
So listen, technical stuff.
Let's do this. We've been live podcasting.
Yeah.
We've been live casting to give away, and we had a problem, so I was vamping for like 10 minutes. So what we're going to do now is we are going to give away
the first bookmark.
These items.
The first
and we
bookmark.
Have three bookmarks. We have three bookmarks, and again, they're amazing bookmarks, and they're better when they're right side up, not that the listeners can hear. That turn...
Catfish, for our listeners who are hearing this days from now, we're live on Periscope on this, the 26th of July, 2015.
Wow, okay, all right. Yes, let's be clear about that. It's live July 26th. We're giving away three great bookmarks that turn the image. If you turn them, they turn from Jonathan Strange to Mr. Norrell,
right.
And I'm having a hard time showing that to the people on our... who are watching live,
Periscope,
but they can see the bell. All right, so should I grab the? Let me grab the.
Well, let's get a picture of it.
Oh, okay.
Catfish, we're having more technical problems. Okay, so can we see? That's a bowl with everybody's name. If you gave an iTunes review, if you tweeted out Lost Hope Podcast, that's everybody's name.
Here it is.
And so I want everybody to see that this is on the up and up. So I'm going to put the camera down, Catfish, and just pull out a name and draw it.
Okay, I'll hold that so you can see people.
Well, no,
can
just
see right
just
there.
Oh, you want me to draw? All right,
well,
I will draw the first winner.
This is for the first. We're gonna do. We're gonna do one more thing, and we're also gonna give away the signed script if we ever get it. But all we're right. gonna draw for that. Okay,
here we go.
So first one is yes.
The first one is. Can everybody read that?
I can't. It's something smorgasbord.
Read it, Catfish. This is. Who is this? We just had them last week. They joined
Chromatophore Press at Squid Girl.
At Squid Girl.
If you're on, give us a heart, but you get one of these.
Right. You just won the first bookmark from BBC America.
I swear to God, if one of the people who is watching live doesn't win, I'm going to be very upset.
Okay. So,
and not they'll be more upset. So I'm going to grab one right now.
So wait, no. Okay, we got to break this up some. So that is at Squid Girl. GRRL. And to reclaim your prize, just write to me, Bubba, at my email address of Fitten, FITTEN, at prodigy.net. That's Fitten at prodigy.net. Tell me where you want me to mail you this prize.
I just want to make this clear.
Make it clear.
That even though Jonathan Strange is on Gmail, Mr. Noro is on prodigy.net.
That you got no hearts. People are taking away their hearts for your hatred of that, Catfish. All right, Catfish, I want to get to some listener feedback.
Okay, let's hear it.
So we had from Matt Papa, who's at MatthewPapa2. He said, I wonder if Google Translate has a Raven King setting. I rate this 10 Raven King Rosetta Stones out of 10. Pretty impressive, huh? That's pretty good. Well, we also got a tweet from Hurt Few Librarian, who's at StrangeFan3.
Okay, we like that.
They said, while the differences between the show and book bothered me the most in Episode 7, the acting was excellent and made Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell more charming. Why don't you read these other tweets, starting with Maggie Cat?
And you delight our people who are watching live. I'm trying to please two different audiences at once here. Okay, this is our friend Maggie.
Yes.
At L'Etoile 6.
Right.
I hope I said it right, because she said I said it right last time.
Okay.
You know, I am a half French Canadian.
That's
that
true.
Makes me a hick Frenchman.
Go.
Maggie says, episode 7, 9 magically detached butterfly ears out of 10.
Ooh.
Because chapter 65 end and unnecessary theatrics added.
Ooh, okay. All right.
All right. Podcast Winterfell.
Hey, Matt Murdock.
Yeah. Says, I conservatively give the Strange and Norrell finale 11.5 out of 10 Sacrifice Hurt Jew Libraries.
Wow. Okay.
And Maggie, again, L'Etoile 6, says, double C's just occurred. Double C's?
What's that?
Crying children mass.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Okay, was there anything else, Catfish?
Well, yes, we've got Nat Pat at La Ren Soul says, I want a spinoff. Strange in the Holy Water Basin. It was so good.
All right. Yeah, that'd be a fun spinoff.
Sarah Hawkins Medusky. Sarah H. Medusky says, spinoff, Flora and Arabella, vampire hunters, or werewolves, or ghosts, or all three.
Okay, cool.
And our old friend, Sean at Hey Ref, says, book reader's thoughts on Grace Adu. I liked it, though not same depth, humor, charm as the book.
So
would
the ladies
use it for another series.
Yeah, so they're talking about The Ladies of Grace Adu was a collection of short stories,
right,
kind of set in the land of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Okay.
That Susanna Clarke released. It's time for our second drawing, Catfish.
Oh my God.
Let's get to it. So
okay, I'm gonna draw. You can show that I'm drawing for real.
All right, so our next winner.
Okay, I'm going to grab right there, and it is.
All right, let's see it.
Oh, my God, what? Wait, hold on. Oh, there it is. It is. Is that upside down?
No, it's just reverse, Catfish. It's reverse, Catfish. All right, just.
Still upside down.
Oh, my Lord.
All right, it's C.H. Mayer at C.H. Mayer.
Hey.
Yay, C.H. Mayer.
You just won the second bookmark.
You win this, C.H. Mayer, another bookmark.
So C.H. Mayer reached me, I'm Bubba, at Fitten at prodigy.net. That's Fitten at prodigy.net. So one of the things I asked our listeners is, I said, if you've read the book and seen the miniseries.
Yes.
What do you recommend to friends who are newbies who haven't done any of this? And so Joe, who's at Solitary Joe, she said she would recommend both the miniseries and the book. She says it's hard to say which order because I don't know what it would be like to watch without having read the book. So she had already read the books. We had our good friend, once again, Hurt Few Librarian, who says, watch the miniseries first so you won't be let down by things that had been omitted, though the show is true to the spirit and pretty faithful to the novel.
I think I would always agree with that.
Okay.
It's tough because when you watch something, then instead of using your imagination, like if you'd watch this and then read the books, you would imagine
right.
Eddie Marsden as Mr. Norrell, that kind of thing. But you're all, I think you're, no matter what, you're always going to be disappointed by the film thing. It just can't cover everything in the book. The only book that I ever read that I thought was filmed exactly because it wasn't that deep.
What was
the filmed adaptation of Election?
That was a great movie.
That and the book, it captured everything in the book because the book was actually kind of slight, but it was perfect.
Okay, we're going to burn through a bunch of others because a lot of people were responding.
Burn.
To Jed, who's at Jed and White on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
He said, watch the series first for the core of the story, then read the book for all of the footnotes. Rereading after watching, and you'll find the book was even better. Hurt for You Librarian says, in responding, says, you know, watch first if you don't have much time, but read for more magic and history. Ashlyn Marie Strange, who's at Teller Marie, she says, I've yet to read the book, but will do when I get a spare moment. I want to get my friends to watch it first and then read it with
me. You're going to need more than one spare moment.
Okay,
yeah. You need quite a few spare moments.
Hamlet is Dead, who's Shakespeare spoiler at Hamlet is Dead, says, I'd say the miniseries first, like most great novels. I get much more from the book, but the show is so relatable and emotional.
True.
Claudia, who's at Celestina 118, she says, I would watch the show first, and if you can't get it off your mind, read the book to get the extra bits. Peter, who's at Bagga, B-A-G-G-A, 2007, says, I'm biased. Peter says he's biased, but if you want to be bored, read the book.
Bam! L-O-L. Team Catfish!
Sean Gregan, who's at...
Hey Ref,
he says... I'd say for newbies, watch the show. If you love the world, read the book to get more. Excellent. Maggie says it's tough because she feels there's so many delicious little bits in the book that aren't in the series.
There's also a lot of boring bits in the book that aren't in the series.
Well, that's certain people feel that way.
Right.
I don't. Finally, we have Hurt Few Librarian.
Uh-huh.
Says some of his favorite scenes of the Holy miniseries. He says when Arabella chews out Jonathan Strange for walking out on the King's Road. And then when Mr. Norrell begs Jonathan Strange not to leave is another one of their favorite scenes. So
okay.
We have, you know, everybody wants more. Everybody wants more. Sean Gregan, who's at Hey Ref, he had a question for everybody. He said,
right.
Which character has been the most vividly enhanced by the series? And Maggie responded with Lady Pole. They really gave her some... meaty bits, not naughty bits, but meaty bits.
Some people have wanted
and
some naughty bits.
Enhanced her roles.
Yeah.
Pat Spinagle, Patman23, he says, I think any TV show would benefit from some draw light. He's like, think if you redid Smallville. It'd be Jonathan Kent and Mr. Jor-El.
Oh, that's nice.
Cammy Settle just wanted to say she really loved the last episode, and she says... as much as I want to think that Clark meant Delgado, meant cat, she also says, you know, Delgado, the way it's spelled, means thin. She says the show has done a fantastic job of staying true to the book. And so the one thing we've learned from this whole podcast experiment...
what is it?
...is that people follow my Goodreads account. That's Fit and Trim on Goodreads.
Okay.
If you want to know good books to read.
Right.
And ignore Catfishes because he doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to books.
Right. And my Catfish... and my Goodreads account is under the name Chris. So look
Christopher.
For Chris.
It's actually Christopher.
Oh, that's not easy to find then.
Not easy to find at all. All right, let's give away our third and final bookmark.
Okay.
Catfish, are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
All right, let's see it. So.
All right. So, here I'm grabbing, and then we've got two more prizes to give away after this.
Two more prizes we're going to give away.
Okay, and this one is, I'm just going to show the camera, and then however it gets shown is the way that it is. Uh-huh. A little bit more. And
it's the Patman.
Oh, Patman 23.
Patman 23. One of always our
loyal
wins.
Listeners.
So, Patman, send me your mailing address and you will get one of these wonderful Lost Hope approved bookmarks. That's a bookmark for Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yeah, that is amazing that the Patman won. Wait, you know what, people always, but here's the thing. This is why it's good that we're doing this live, because people have accused us in the past of not doing this. And you know, Bubba spends all his time typing these names out, and then he made me cut them last time, and he cut them himself this time. So believe me, if we wanted to give stuff to people, specific people, we wouldn't go through all this trouble. So do you have other stuff you want to say,
yeah,
or should we
couple,
give away the
couple,
big stuff? We got some big stuff to give away.
We got big stuff coming up right now, though, everybody. Right now, though.
Talk to me.
We want to talk about our podcast network, all the shows we're doing, and the things people are pitching us to do in the future.
Oh, people are pitching us? Because we got some stuff already we're going to do in the future.
Right. So if you're new to Lost Hope Podcast, we also do a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire saga. It's called The Joffrey Podcast.
Oh my goodness, why is it called The Joffrey Podcast?
Because he's first of his name, first in your heart. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, and please check that out if you're into Jonathan Strange or Mr. Norrell. Later tonight, we're going to be doing a podcast on America's favorite vampire apocalypse show. And hopefully it's our only vampire apocalypse show. What's the name of that podcast?
That
Catfish?
One is called Got Your Milk, because of the main character.
Once in the very first episode and never again said, I'm an alcoholic, give me milk. I got your milk.
And now he is an alcoholic.
Now he's better as an alcoholic, as most of us are.
That one, I will say this about that podcast. Let me differentiate the three podcasts.
Sure.
This one, we were huge fans of. You were a huge fan of the source material.
Right.
And we were both huge fans of the show.
Sure.
So it was a little straightforward.
Right.
For the Joffrey podcast, we love the show. We love the books.
Right.
But also, we take that from the point of view of Joffrey is the greatest human being in the history of man, real or fictional.
Amen.
And so we cover the show while it's airing.
Right.
We kind of do the same thing we do for Lost Hope.
Sure.
But also when it's not airing, we do some great things. We do some chapters from Joffrey's point of view.
Right.
You know, we do songs. We do other things. We do a lot. We have a lot of fun with that one. And with The Strain, we do a lot of recreations.
Yeah, we recreate wonderful scenes from the show.
Yeah.
And make them just as wonderful as they were on the show.
We're having issues with that show. But listen to that show, please, because we do it for you. Otherwise, I wouldn't even watch The Strain. I'd be so happy not to.
That's true. We also have a third podcast besides this one we're doing, and that is my good friend Tasha are reading along with Harper Lee's precursor to Kill a Mockingbird. It's the infamous, you know what, it's the Go Set and Watchmen Read Along podcast, where we're reading that, and we're kind of breaking it up sometimes by chapters, sometimes
all
by
right.
section, and we've just finished up part three of that novel.
Wow, okay.
And it's, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to Podomatic, search Bubba and Tasha's Go Set a Watchmen Read Along podcast.
And now one other thing we're doing, I'm so glad we're putting this on video, because this microphone is obstructing my entire face.
Yeah, that's the way most listeners like it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, go.
Is that we will be doing Ash versus the Evil Dead. That starts in Halloween. Mm-hmm. And if you know about any of the Evil Dead shows, Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, or Army of Darkness,
right.
I expect that to be the fun show that I wish The Strain was. So we're going to be doing that one.
All right.
And
so,
what other ones have people pitched us?
Well, people, our good friend Susan Stacy, who's
at
Black Eyed Lily on Twitter.
Okay, we like her.
She wanted to help us out. She was going to donate a deck of cards of Marseille for us to give away here on the podcast.
What?
And I was like, Susan, that is so nice of you to do it. Susan's a great person. I work with her on Podcast Winterfell some. But, you know, I was like, you know, don't do it. Let's make BBC give us these wonderful bookmarks. And then she also said she was wondered if we would consider continuing on with a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell book read podcast, and she thinks people who watch the show would be able to get into the books. Now, Catfish, you've been wrong. Everything you said about the book was wrong. The book was great. The book was wonderful. I just have to be honest. We're about to go into the fall, and both of us waste so much of our lives watching football on the weekend that I really don't know how much time, but we're going to keep the Lost Hope podcast name and keep it out there and still going. Susan Hawkins Medusky, who's at, oh, sorry, Sarah Hawkins Medusky, who's at Sarah H. Miduski. That's M-I-D-U-S-K-I. She says maybe we should do a Librarians podcast when it comes back because she's a big fan of the Librarians.
Okay.
Sean Gregan, our good friend at Hey Ref, yeah. He said he's looking forward to the Warrior Chronicles, the thing I told you guys about, the book series from Bernard Cornwell I had read about Vikings attacking England and stuff. And he
Got
was
it.
Saying that he wanted us to do a podcast about that show coming on BBC America.
Right.
BBC. And I just have to say, I'm not sure we're going to do it. You know, we read all sorts of stuff. We read all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I read the book, The Martian, that's about to be a movie with Matt Damon.
Right.
I read the first book in the Expanse series, and The Expanse is about to be a show on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm reading now the seventh book in this Last Kingdom series, which is about to be a BBC series. I read The Girl on the Train, which is a great friggin' book that's about to be a movie. The novel Wool is about to be a movie. The Goldfish has been optioned to be a movie.
Right, and there's two great new science fiction shows, Humans
too
and
late, too late.
Mr.
We
Robot.
Those. Yep,
we miss those.
And so just the general idea is, hey, keep giving us ideas, and we'll try. We are not what I like to call double P.
Double P.
Professional podcasters, even though we do so much, it feels like we're professional now.
It really does.
Folks, we actually are losing money. I'm spending, I don't want to say how much, but I'm spending a chunk of change on each of these podcasts, so I apologize. You know, hey, if BBC America, they give us bookmarks, maybe if they give us screeners to The Last Kingdom, we'll do a podcast about it. But
right.
Otherwise, we will find other projects, and please keep pitching us projects because we love hearing about what you guys like. This whole podcast, we do it obviously not to make money. I'm, you know,
because we don't.
Yeah, we're not in fancy clothes or anything.
No,
we do it because we love the shows most of the time.
Yeah,
sorry the strain, but we love the shows. We love
right.
the books, and
that
we love interacting with you guys. Really,
right.
That's why we do it. So thank you so much for all your tweets, all your iTunes reviews.
Yeah, all your feedback
it's
is great.
It's really been wonderful. Okay, so Catfish.
And occasionally, once in a while,
yeah,
like once every 3 years, someone sends us a king cake.
That's exactly true.
Thank you, Ed Hunpants.
Amen. So Catfish, let's give away the Lost Hope Bell. We're going to
Oh my God,
away
this is exciting. The bell. We're giving away the bell now.
Lost Hope Bell.
We've already given away the three. Mm-hmm. We've given away the three bookmarks. And there we go. This is Honest to God Live. This is the live pull of a name for the bell.
One, two,
okay,
three.
You're mixing
it's
it up.
This one right.
I see you mix it up.
It's this one right here.
Okay.
That I had my thumb on.
Okay.
And it is. What is it?
I don't know. I have to read it. You have to show it to me.
It is. Everybody, get ready. It is. Oh my God.
No, you told me.
Oh my
me
God.
No.
This can't be.
You told me that this would not happen.
I can't believe it, folks. The reason why we're so shocked is this person.
No, come on.
On our other podcast, has won stuff before. The Lost Hope Bell, I can't believe it. Thank God we recorded this on video so people can see. It is Holly Hunt Pants has won the Lost Hope Bell. Oh my God.
You promised me this would not happen.
Holly has now won three prizes
you
on our
You promised me this would
this
not happen.
This is insane. There are like 50 to 100 little slips of paper in here.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness gracious. So now,
all right, well, thankfully there is a better prize.
Yes. All right. So the final thing.
Uh-huh.
The final thing I wanted to talk about is if you're about to read the novel, if you're
uh-huh.
about to read the novel,
uh-huh.
I've said I loved it. I said it's one of my favorite novels of all
mm-hmm.
time, but I do want people to understand the stuff that Catfish talks about. And that is, what do I mean by that? I want to say, if
yes.
you look at some of those reviews, and it got great reviews, but even within the reviews, it says that, for example, a really praise review The Guardian gave Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is it says, Clark engages in a curious narrative strategy of continual deferral and delay. And that's why when people like Catfish say the novel's boring, it's because a lot of it is kind of pushing it. It is all these kind of side tangents and stuff. In his review in Science Fiction Weekly, this guy suggested at almost every scene in the first 300 pages should have been delicately trimmed. Ouch. And then another person wrote of a review, it says, the plot creaks frightfully in many places and the pace dawdles. If you want to know if you will actually enjoy the novel,
yeah,
it might be smart to go to one of those places that let you read the first chapter, check it out and see if you like the first chapter, or download or purchase her collection of short stories, The Ladies of Grace Adieu, because that might give you a taste of the writing style. I think that novel is great. But there are people who do have trouble just kind of with the pace and the writing. So,
me.
Yeah, I meant catfish. That's all.
There
I
are people who agree with me.
There are.
I just want to say that, and there are loyal fans.
No,
so you can give me a, when you give
they're
me
two,
a hard time.
Two people.
You give them a hard time.
If you agree with
I
catfish,
just want you to know.
Check yourself into an institution. All right.
Oh man, that
catfish,
is cruel.
This is probably a close to 3 hour podcast.
Okay, well at least
we are going to name.
At least Holly Humpants can't win the signed.
Oh my God.
Script.
Here it is. You ready?
Which is amazing. Hold all on. Right. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh, my God.
Here it comes.
I hope someone who is watching gets it. Okay, so I pulled this one. This is the one that I pulled. I don't know what
it says. Wow, this is an iTunes review that just came in. It's
handwritten.
Yeah, because it's a recent iTunes review. Read it. What's it say?
Okay, it says, podcast pal from Switzerland. It's the Swiss.
Oh no,
it's our Switzerland. So what this
the guy
means
who
is,
hates the intro music. Podcast pal won it. Oh my God.
No, but you know what the best part about this is?
What?
Is that if we actually get the script,
right,
it will have gone from England,
right,
to California,
right,
to Switzerland. And what it also means is when Bubba talks about how we don't make money off this podcast,
yeah, we're about to lose a lot of money.
He's going to have to spend the money to send.
Where did you spend
the
some money?
Script to
catfish spends no money.
I do. I
no money from catfish.
I got the t-shirts.
Oh, all right. So
I bought the t-shirts, the Joffrey Podcast t-shirts.
All right, so
I bought all of them. You said, oh, let me give you some money. I said, no, I'll buy the t-shirts.
So congratulations to Podcast Pal. Podcast Pal,
oh,
please
man.
Go to email me.
This Bubba, is horrible.
At my email address is fitten@prodigy.net.
Yep.
Fitten, F-I-T-T-E-N, @prodigy.net.
Yep.
Well, let's all point out that Catfish was the one who drew somebody in friggin' Switzerland. Good work, Catfish.
I'm always get blamed
terrible,
for things.
Terrible, the worst. All right, so Catfish, until I'm back in the country for my Ireland escape.
You're the one who drew Holly.
I know. I can't believe it. All right. So until we're back, you can reach me on Twitter, and I'll be listening. I'll be reading my Twitter in Ireland. You can reach me, Bubba. I'm @fitandtrim. That's FitenTrim @fitandtrim on Twitter. Or.
And you can reach me, Catfish. I will be in Los Angeles @CJGman67.
Yeah.
The hearts came up only when I mentioned my name. So thank you very much for the hearts specifically.
Delete the hearts. All right. So, everyone, until you hear from us again, we'll be in the sky, beyond the clouds, beyond the rain, on the other side of the rain, in
Lost Hope.